They gave us a present, and the present arrived today. And it was a very big present worth a tremendous amount of money. And I'm not going to tell you what that present is.
No one seems to know what it is. Meanwhile, more troops are being dispatched to the region. Back here in the UK. Only 26% are satisfied with the NHS. The young are the most ill-disposed. The Health Secretary will join us later in this hour. And what form of guidance is this? Transgender girls are told to leave girl guiding groups by September. Those stories and more after the 7 o'clock news on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 7 o'clock, President Trump has insisted that Iran badly wants a deal to end the four-week conflict. Reports in the United States say Washington has drawn up a 15-point plan for ending the war, but Tehran has mocked Mr. Trump's claims of peace talks, suggesting that he's negotiating with himself. The US president told reporters last night America has received a very big present from Iran related to oil and gas.
The present, the gift they made to us was very significant, and they're the only ones that could have done it. Jennifer?
Was it related to the Strait of Hormuz and the flow of...
Yeah, it was related to the flow and to the Strait, yeah.
Are you negotiating on who's going to control the Strait from now on?
No, we'll have control of anything we want.
Iran has told the United Nations that non-hostile ships will in future be able to pass through the Strait of Hormuz. The announcement overnight helped push down oil prices to under $100 a barrel. 300 teenagers in the UK are to take part in a six-week trial of a social media ban. The group will also test out time limits and curfews to assess the impact that screen time has on schoolwork and sleep. It'll run alongside the government's consultation on a potential Australian-style ban for under-16s. Ellen Room is among bereaved parents who are supporting it.
We just desperately don't want anybody else to be in our position. The loss of a child is truly horrific when you actually come to it. It's way worse. And it doesn't end on the death of your child. The anniversaries, the Mother's Days, the Christmas, the birthdays, it's relentless.
Research suggests public satisfaction with NHS services has increased for the first time since the pandemic. It rose by 26% across England, Scotland and Wales last year. That's up from an all-time low of 21% in 2024. But the British Social Attitudes Survey found that younger people were less happy with the service. Councils in England are to receive guidance for the first time on how to create safer streets for women and girls. It's understood the plans are still to be finalised, but will include measures such as better lighting and improved CCTV. It follows a study by a government agency which found 9 out of 10 women report feeling unsafe walking at night. And the first female Archbishop of Canterbury, Dame Sarah Mullally, will be enthroned in a formal ceremony later. It'll mark the symbolic start to her position as head of the Church of England following her appointment in October. In the city, the FTSE 100 will reopen later at 9,965. It closed up 71 yesterday. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.15. LBC weather, a mix of sunny spells and patchy rain for large parts of the UK. Some wintry showers on northern hills, a high of 10 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Get the unstoppable Samsung Galaxy S26 with serious processing power. It gets you gaming and streaming seamlessly when you're out and about. Right now, you can save £16 per month on the UK's best network. And if you trade in your old device, you can save even more. Get yours today on EE. Launch offer ends 30th of March.
Saving on minimum 24-month 125GB Essentials Airtime Plan. Eligibility, credit check and terms apply. Credit by EE Limited. Verify best network at ee.co.uk/claims.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Want you 4 minutes after seven, Wednesday, March the 25th. That old cry, what about the workers? It will be the workers who will pick up the cheque. As middle class and others lose out, the benefits claimants, it will appear, will get all the help to meet those soaring energy bills. How fair does that seem? We'll have a full report. In a related conversation, Business and Trade Secretary Peter Carr speaking with me yesterday about the calls for a profit cap on some energy and some petrol companies.
I am not against profit, but I'm against the profiteering. We still have the windfall tax in place on oil and gas extraction.
The man who floated the idea is the cost of living czar, Richard, now Lord Walker, the man who runs Iceland. He will join us later in the show to give us more background. Now, President Trump speaking mysteriously about a gift. They want to do a deal, sending more troops, but the idea he's negotiating with himself. Here he is, the great deal maker. How close are we to some kind of deal?
The leaders are all gone. Nobody knows who to talk to. But we're actually talking to the right people, and they want to make a deal so badly. You have no idea how badly they want to make a deal.
On the upside, public satisfaction with the NHS is improving for the first time since 2019. On the downside, only 26% of us are satisfied with the NHS. Health Secretary Wes Streeting will join us later in the hour, in this first hour, to discuss. Plus,
London's first and only detox centre for homeless people is closing because of government cuts. I'm LBC's Shivani Sharma at St Thomas's Hospital with the exclusive.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
As two newspaper front pages spell out today, middle class to foot the bill for Reeves' benefits, fuel bailout, or the other one, middle class will lose out as benefits claimant gets energy help. While nothing is actually determined and fully set, it would appear that will be the basic course followed by the government. Here with full details, Natasha Clarke, LBC's political editor, joining me in the studio. Natasha, good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Yes, the government have signalled that they are willing to help some of us with the rising cost of energy, but not all of us, and not yet. Rachel Reeves gave another updates to MPs in the House of Commons yesterday. She said she would only be willing to provide support to, quote, those who really need it. She revealed that she is planning for some kind of intervention on energy bills. But like I say, it's not going to be for all of us.
I can confirm to the House that contingency planning is taking place for every eventuality so that we can keep costs down for everyone and provide support for those who need it most, acting within our ironclad fiscal rules to keep inflation and interest rates as low as possible. Mr. Speaker, this is not a war that we started, nor is it a war that we joined, unlike the advice of the parties opposite. But it is a war that will have an impact on our country.
And Nick, she vowed that this government would learn some lessons from one very unlikely Prime Minister, Liz Truss.
That gave the support to the most wealthiest of households. Between 2022 and 2024, under the last government, households in the top income decile received an average of £1,350 of direct energy bill support. That left us with high levels of national debt.
So she hit out at that government for the £40 billion bailout that we got when Ukraine was invaded back in October 2022. She says we are still paying off those bills now. But one former Chancellor, Jeremy Hunt, urged her not to increase government borrowing to pay for her next bailout.
Although last time we gave support to households and families with her support by increasing borrowing, we cannot react to every single economic shock by further increasing our national debt. So will she confirm that when she comes to the House in her budget with targeted support, it will be fully funded and not funded by increasing yet again our national debt?
But Nick, in reply, the Chancellor could not promise that she will not increase borrowing to do that. So we could be looking at a bigger debt pile for the UK in order to pay for this energy bill bailout. However, on the other end of the spectrum, other politicians are calling for more help. Sir Ed Davey said there should be more support for those on modest and middle incomes. Here is he speaking to my colleague Aggie Chambray yesterday.
Well, it needs to be a targeted package for people who are really struggling, but there needs to be help for others as well. I mean, if people on modest and middle incomes are going to find paying an extra £500 on energy bills, which is what some people are saying, on top of higher petrol prices, on top of higher mortgage costs, on top of the cost of living already, they're going to really struggle. That will hit our economy. So the government's got to think really carefully, and I think they should be a little more generous than what I'm hearing.
So the Treasury are now working on what that might look like in terms of support. As you say, newspapers today saying it will target those who are already getting the warm home discount and those who are already on benefits. So some of the lowest incomes in our society. But there are questions about where that cutoff will be. And also, Nick, when is the time to help? I'm told that it's not this period, not the summer, because obviously we all turn our heatings off over the summer, but the period beginning in September in the winter months that ministers are most concerned about. They say they've got time to work out a targeted support package, but the Tories say the economy has been left in such a mess that how are we going to pay for it?
OBC's political editor Natasha Clark reporting. In a related story, 9 minutes after seven, news breaking at this time, the rate of CPI inflation, consumer price index inflation, has remained unchanged at 3% in February. It remains unchanged at 3% in February. Back to Natasha's report. Let's get Simmel Stride, who, of course, Conservative MP and Shadow Chancellor of the Exchequer, into the conversation. What we seem to be seeing, or working out the direction in which this assistance will go, if the speculation is right, how do you respond, Simmel? Morning to you.
Good morning, Nick. Well, look, I've made two points here. One is there is something that the government could do right now to take the pressure off, and that is to get carbon taxes and the kind of subsidies that we have on the green levy side out of people's energy bills. That would reduce them by about 20%. We put that forward as what we're calling our cheap power plan. The second thing is they should scrap the proposed increase in fuel duty that they're planning to bring in September. And thirdly, and really importantly, we've got all this oil and gas up in the North Sea, which is being taxed and licensed out of existence. We should be bringing that on stream big time so that we can get that into our gas and energy system in the country. But you've also made the point there about the state of the economy, and the reality is whatever the Chancellor decides she's going to do, she's got very little room for manoeuvre to support people now because of the way that they have mismanaged the economy, not least on inflation, where we've just seen once again inflation remaining high and well above target under this government.
So Mel, one newspaper, the Daily Mail, calculates extra revenue from VAT on fuel and taxes on oil and gas producers could be netting the Chancellor £3 billion. If that is the case, how fair or otherwise is it that those in work who will have to shoulder the costs of allowing others to get some kind of bailout?
So the way that this government operates is whenever there's a squeeze on its fiscal position or a requirement to step in and help out in some way, is it turns either to borrowing or to taxing people even more. And taxing people even more makes things even worse. What they should be doing is controlling government spending. So what they should be doing is, for example, getting the welfare bill down, getting people off benefits and into work. And by doing that, they can make the savings to help people out. But I fear that what the Chancellor is going to be doing is coming back for yet more tax or increasing borrowing at a time when she's created a very fragile economy, very high level of debt, that I'm afraid isn't going to really be able to provide much firepower when it comes to helping people out.
Coming back to the point you made, Simmel, about oil and gas exploration licences in the North Sea, can I ask you, who is running this country? Is it Sir Keir Starmer or Ed Miliband?
Well, it appears to be increasingly Ed Miliband, Nick. I mean, this obsession with net zero, we all want to get carbon down, and we've been very successful in doing that. But the reality is that when you are importing huge amounts of oil and gas, and when it comes to gas, we're importing it, much of it, from Norway, who are taking it out of the very basin that we are not exploiting. I mean, it is totally absurd. So we're running up our bill on importing gas when we've got plenty of it here under the ocean. So the government needs to change tack here very quickly.
Finally, a sentence, if you would. You did touch on it, but the fact that we've just within the last 10 minutes or so had the inflation figure for this, for February. A word on that, if you would, Simmel.
Well, we've got the highest inflation rate now in the G7. We had the highest rate in the G7 last year. That's because when you tax businesses, they pass some of it on to higher prices. And when you borrow lots of money and spend lots of money, you drive up inflation. So that number's got nothing to do with what's happening in the Middle East. That is down to the choices this government has made. And it's left us in the worst possible position, leaning into the challenge that's coming our way.
Simmel Stride, thank you for your time. Shadow Chancellor of the Exchequer, 13 minutes after seven. Let's bring into the conversation Simon Francis, coordinator of the End Fuel Poverty Coalition. And I would imagine you see the equation probably in a fairer light, in that those who need it most will probably be the ones who will get it more, or most of the bailout. Good morning to you.
Good morning. Yeah, what we're seeing, though, is that it's not just about those people who are on benefits. It's going to be about wider people who are suffering as a result of this oil and gas price spike. So already we're seeing people on heating oil, on LPG heated homes, suffering because the prices there have shot up. And people will start noticing their bills from the 1st of July. You know, I think there does need to be a phased approach. We need to look at kind of getting support to those people who are suffering now and who will have medical or health consequences as a result of higher bills over the summer. But then there needs to be a contingency. You can't just suddenly say, well, some people are going to be exposed to whatever the markets say. And we need to have something that's not only fit for this current crisis and what may or may not happen to bills come next winter, but also what is the structure for support in the long term? This is the second time in 5 years that we've seen a massive price spike that's threatening people's energy bills. We can't allow history to keep on repeating itself as we see the prices of fossil fuel spike.
The government's cost of living czar, Richard, now Lord Walker, floated the idea of a profit cap, i.e. nothing to do with profiteering, but a profit cap. When I tell you that a firm such as BP, gross profit was £55 billion, where are you on the idea of some form of profit cap, Mr. Francis?
Well, this is why we just can't understand why people are calling for an end to the windfall tax at the moment. You know, over the last 2 years alone, you know, energy firms have made over £40 billion in profit in the UK with the windfall tax in place, £125 billion since the energy crisis started. There is plenty of money in the system that is going from household bills to people, to these companies. So, you know, why they're talking about, yes, we are going to need to step in and support people with the cost of this, there is no need to go to the taxpayer in general. There is money there in the system we should be using first to support people.
Simon Francis, your coordinator of the End Poverty Coalition, thank you for your input. If you're a worker, you'll be footing the bill. If you're on benefits, you'll be picking up the benefit. How fair is that? Meanwhile, later in the show, we're going to be joined by Health Secretary Wes Streeting, because public satisfaction with the NHS is improving for the first time in 7 years, but it's still just 26%. We're streeting later in the hour. 7:15 LBC News headlines. Dominic Ellis.
Iran has suggested President Trump is negotiating with himself after he insisted Tehran badly wants a deal to end the war. Data just released shows the rate of inflation remained unchanged in the UK at 3% in February. And 300 teenagers in the UK are to take part in a 6-week trial of a social media ban. LBC weather. A mix of sunny spells and patchy rain for large parts of the country. Some wintry showers on northern hills. A cooler day, a high of 10 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. The A40 remains closed both ways between the Northern Roundabout and the Marylebone Flyover for the ongoing works. Now, the official diversion is via the M4 and the A4, and already there are delays of about half an hour on the M4 eastbound onto the elevated section. There are delays on the M25 anti-clockwise to junction 26 at Waltham Abbey, and that's because a van has broken down. The A2 is very slow this morning, westbound from the Danson interchange to the Kidbrook interchange, and also the A13 very slow, heading westbound from Raynham to Barking. Only one Woolwich ferry can run today because of the maintenance works. And better news on the underground. Those delays on the Jubilee line have now cleared.
Hear every side of the story. LBC.
The weather's warmer, the days are longer, and the savings are even better in the Hillary's Spring Sale. Right now, there's up to 40% off hundreds of made-to-measure styles. Plus, get an extra 10% off everything in our flash event, including our total blackout blinds for complete darkness and a good night's sleep. And don't forget, with Hillary's, measuring and fitting is always included. So get window wise and book your free in-home appointment today at hillarys.co.uk. But hurry, an extra 10% off everything ends the 13th of April. Conditions apply.
Call Nick Ferrari now, 0345 6060 973, LBC.
Sorry to interrupt your day, but I've just been diagnosed with dementia, and I'm going to need your help. I'll need help when I can no longer button a shirt or recognise my own family. My daughter will need help too. I worry this could ruin her life. And we will all need help to find a cure to end the devastation of dementia. I can't do this alone.
It will take a society to beat dementia. Alzheimer's Society.
When laughter's guaranteed. When there's fun and games with big names. When it's something everyone in the family loves watching.
Who do you think the surprise guest is?
No way he'll top last week's.
I think they have.
Nothing brings us together like Brew TV. And the TV license covers you to watch all TV channels, packed full of entertainment for a big night in. Search TV license together.
Ugh, drizzly drive to the office. Ever wanted to just shove some bits in a bag? Hop on a plane and land somewhere magnifique? Well, with Kayak Explore, it's easier than ever. Whatever your budget, wherever you want to go, simply set the amount you want to spend and Kayak finds flights that fit. Easy breezy. Search Kayak and go see for yourself.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
What about the workers, that famous political cry? Well, they'll, as ever, be picking up the cheque, it would appear, for the bailout. 19 minutes after 7. Ethan, you'll be the first caller. I mentioned this is on front page of the newspapers, the Daily Mail. Middle class to foot the bill for Reeves' benefits. The front page of the Times. Middle class will lose out as benefit claimants get energy help. Other stories, a powerful one on the front page of the Daily Telegraph. We're going to give you more detail on that in our regular roundup in the world of business, which is about 15 minutes away, roughly. National savings in chaos over payouts. Bank accused of shortchanging the bereaved. Some families amid thousands of complaints. As I say, we'll give you more detail on that. The other big story running, of course, is events in the Middle East. The Guardian saying the US is set to deploy airborne troops. Middle East strikes intensify, and the Eye telling us US troops gather in the Gulf. Trump's deadline nears. If you go to the app, the LBC app, there's more on that Donald Trump story. Trump proposes a 15-point Iran peace plan. We will try and get more details on that. And let's take one other website at random. Let's go to the Sky News, which is also talking about a little bit of what Samuel Stride actually told us. There's a picture of Ed Miliband and the suggested his obsession with net zero and eco policies means that many will be picking up the bills to come. All right, let's talk about picking up bills. We know, well, it would appear we know which way the Chancellor is going to go, how fair or otherwise. Ethan in Guildford to get us started. You're on the radio, Ethan. What are you going to tell me? Good morning.
Hi, good morning, sir. Oh,
good morning.
I think the situation is Donald Trump, it's all about mineral wars. He's invading Greenland. He killed the head of Iran, which is hiking up gas petroleum prices.
Yes.
And my friend, he traded in his Mercedes for an e-car, electric cars. I think at least 20, 30 years, everyone's, you know, first world countries, petrol cars will be obsolete.
Well, who knows? Can I ask you, when it comes to offering bailouts to people, is it right, in your view, that it would appear that those in work will be paying for those out of work to get the bailout? How fair or otherwise do you think that is?
I'm not sure. In what context are you...
Well, if the government provides help, they're talking about it will be limited help, and it would appear it will be only those on benefits who will get the help. Is that fair in your book, Ethan?
Well, I prefer that, excuse my opinion, but I prefer that than Keir Starmer giving millions to the Muslim community.
Okay, I don't quite know how we got there, and I think that's possibly just a little trot over by the referee to say, what's your tactics next time you're on a yellow card? Have a good day, Ethan. Sammy's in Grays. Let's hope we make a little more progress. We clear the grey air in Grays. Sammy, is this the right policy as we seem to be seeing it set out? Good morning.
Good morning. No, it's not at all.
Tell me why, Sammy.
Because I've worked all my life. I was a single parent. My children are in their 30s. My youngest child is 30 and has no children.
Right.
Yet she gets no support financially because she works.
Right.
And I've always worked, raised my children myself, stuck in the private rent.
Oh, gosh, rental sector,
trap,
as they call it.
Yeah, I take home, like, $2,200 a month and pay £1,800 a month rent. So
oh, my gosh.
There's no help for people like me.
No, there won't. No, well, not this current plan.
No.
How nervous are you? As Natasha Clark rightly said, we are officially in spring, and the weather does seem to be. But if this is still going on when the autumn returns and we move into the dark days of winter, how nervous would that make you then, Sammy?
Very, very nervous. Extremely nervous. I don't know how I will cope.
And when you talk to your daughter or your other children, and in some instances it would appear that it actually pays you not to work, you're better off sitting at home than what you've done, raised your children. How do they respond to you, Sammy?
Most definitely. They, you know, they agree that you are better off just being at home. All my children work, but...
So where did you get your work ethic from?
My parents.
Was it your mum and dad? Tell me a little bit about what they did, briefly.
Farmers. So my dad was a farmer. Yeah, so, and then I was a farmer first, now working in childcare. And
what did your dad farm? Your mum and dad, was your mum on the farm as well? Probably was, I imagine. It's a family business, yeah.
Yeah.
What did they farm, Sammy?
Pig farmer.
Pig farmer. What, out in Essex?
In Kent.
Down in Kent. Whereabouts?
Yeah.
In Kent?
Just out of interest. Farming, near Maidstone.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. As a kid, I worked on a pig farm. Feeding those pigs is one of the most frightening things imaginable. If you fell in, they just eat you.
Definitely.
That is a frightening thing to work on the pig farm. Sammy, you relax in grace. Thank you. Good luck to your children. Well done for you. Single parent all the way through, raising those children. They're all in work. Credit to you, Sammy. We'll have more calls on that in a moment. Right, from domestic affairs to global affairs. And here's President Trump speaking with journalists in the Oval Office yesterday.
They did something yesterday that was amazing, actually. They gave us a present, and the present arrived today. It was a very big present worth a tremendous amount of money. And I'm not going to tell you what that present is, but it was a very significant prize. And they gave it to us, and they said they were going to give it. So that meant one thing to me, we're dealing with the right people.
Is that nuclear related?
No, it wasn't nuclear related. It was oil and gas related. And it was a very nice thing they did. But what it showed me is that we're dealing with the right people.
Do you think the present actually exists? Who knows? Let's turn to Sally Lockwood, journalist, broadcaster, hosts The State of the World on YouTube and based in Dubai. Okay, Sally, this fantastic present. I don't envy the question I'm about to ask you. Do we have any sense of what it might be? Good morning, Sally.
Hi, Nick. Oh, my goodness, I can't believe you've asked me that. We have no idea what it is. But we apparently have, you know, some sort of understanding via all of the word salads coming out of the White House that it's oil and gas related. But, I mean, you know, you only need to look at the war of words between Tehran and Washington to realize that you just cannot make any sense of what's going on right now. You know, you've got Donald Trump saying the war is effectively won. We've had regime change. We're speaking to the right people. By the way, they've just given me this incredible gift. And then you've got Iran, you know, publicly mocking America, saying, you know, you're dressing up defeat as some sort of agreement. And by the way, we're not talking to you. And, you know, they hold the strongest card here. They may be the weaker party, but they hold the most powerful weapon and have the most leverage here when it comes to the Strait of Hormuz. And Donald Trump knows that. No matter how much he tries to dress it up, he has a real headache on his hands, and he hasn't been able to solve it so far.
Here's what we do know. It would appear 3,000 soldiers are being readied from the Army's 82nd Airborne Division to go to the Middle East. Do we know in what way they're going to be deployed, Sally? What does that mean?
Well, I think this is really interesting, Nick. I have dealt with the 82nd Airborne Division in the past and spoken to them on a number of occasions. They are the immediate response force for the US military, ready to deploy internationally anywhere in the world at 18 hours notice. So I first dealt with them when they were deployed to help with the chaotic evacuation of Afghanistan. Remember that?
Yes.
And then they were deployed to Eastern Europe at the start of the Ukraine war. So the fact that they're now also being deployed here to the Middle East, along with 5,000 Marines, suggests that this is more than just contingency planning. Is Donald Trump buying time here until all these assets are in place? And what next? You know, you do not deploy the 82nd Airborne Division, one of the most powerful resources in the US military, if you are not preparing for events to either unfold in a dangerous trajectory or at least for some sort of escalation.
A devastating critique from Tehran saying that the president is effectively negotiating with himself. Devastating, but it would seem quite accurate, Sally.
Well, I mean, this, you know, mythical 15-point plan that apparently has been presented to Iran via intermediaries, Israel reporting that it also includes a potential 30-day ceasefire. You know, Iran hasn't shown any willingness to, you know, respond to any suggestions that America is looking for an off-ramp here. I think they realize they're in a position of power. And let's not forget, there's absolutely zero trust from Tehran when it comes to Washington. They've held negotiations and talks twice now, last year before the 12-day war and it resulted in America and Israel attacking them while negotiations were underway. And then we've seen several rounds of talks this time, which resulted in this war. So, I mean, you can understand why Tehran is saying, you know, sorry, but we're not interested in talking. And actually, you know what, we can prolong this pain for a bit longer. They've been under, you know, so much pressure internationally for so many years now that actually Iran is very self-sufficient. They don't need imports as much as the rest of the world. Meanwhile, something that is being really underreported, Nick, that we should mention is that the poorest countries in the world will suffer first. We're already hearing, you know, the likes of Indonesia looking at cutting its school food program because of the rising cost of food, which is happening already.
You're right, and there are reports Sri Lanka, they haven't got any electricity, or they're limiting it to electricity supplies as well. Sally Lockwood, thank you. You look after yourself. Broadcaster, journalist, hosts The State of the World on YouTube, joining us from Dubai. Dinesh, Peter, you want to have your views on that? What would appear to be the plan as regards fuel bailouts or fuel energy cost relief? We'll get to you after the news when I can give you a fair run at it. Also after the news,
inflation in the year to February came in at 3%. But economists now widely expect it to jump because of the war in Iran. I'm Christian May from City AM, discussing this with Nick shortly.
Plus, history in the making. The incoming Archbishop of Canterbury, ABC, a woman for the first time. Dame Sarah Mullally, speaking back in October.
I take up this calling with trust not in myself alone, but in God who guides us all. May we be bold in hope, generous in spirit, and steadfast in love.
But what exactly is an enthronement? How will it work? What will we witness? We'll get into that in more detail later in the show. Plus, after the news, Wes Streeting, Health Secretary. The NHS satisfaction is growing in the right direction and growing, but pretty low base. We'll have more on that in the next half an hour or so. It is 7:30. Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari on LBC. Let's get the news from Dominic Ellis.
President Trump has insisted that Iran badly wants a deal to end the four-week conflict in the Middle East, but Tehran has mocked Mr. Trump's claims of peace talks, suggesting that he's negotiating with himself. The UK rate of inflation stayed at 3% last month, as economists expected. Soaring oil and gas prices caused by the war in the Middle East aren't reflected in February's official figures. And 300 teenagers in the UK are to take part in a six-week trial of a social media ban. The group will also test out time limits and curfews to assess the impact that screen time has on schoolwork and sleep. LBC weather, a mix of sunny spells and patchy rain for large parts of the UK. Some wintry showers on northern hills, a cooler day, a high of 10 degrees.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
There is no world in which someone on £100,000 a year should ever expect to receive any help from the government. And I'll start the campaign now, as the government has decided that, yes, actually means testing benefits is a really good idea, because we don't want to spend taxpayers' money on people who we deem to be too wealthy for this. I don't think there should be any form of universal benefit at all. I think all benefits should be means tested.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
My name is Paul, and this is my NHS story. I started to notice that the hip was becoming numb. The GP referred me for an X-ray, and just being informed, being kept in the loop, I feel much better in myself, and I feel confident about how the future is going to unfold.
The government is opening new community diagnostic centres, with many already available 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, so the NHS can be there for all of us when we need it. Find your closest one at gov.uk/NHS Fit for the Future. Available England-wide.
Cancer doesn't care about childhood. It doesn't care what they miss out on or how much you want to protect them. But we do. At Great Ormond Street Hospital Charity, we fund life-saving research, vital family support, and the special things that help seriously ill kids be kids. Until no childhood is lost to cancer. Join us. Search GOSH Charity.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Nick Ferrari at Breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
And to say, just before I told you to, that the news was coming up, have you got any idea what that gift President Trump might be? might lift the mood a little bit. I'm not asking for serious. I'm more amusing. My friend Graham, for instance, is it possibly hair gel? John is saying, is it tickets to Graceland's? I don't know. If you've got a sort of witty idea what the gift, this supposed gift from Iran to President Trump might be, do let me. I might take some emails on that. But into the world of business, it's Serious Matters there. Christian Mayer's editor-in-chief at City AM. Around half an hour ago, we knew the CPI, Consumer Price Index inflation figure. Christian, remind the listeners what it is and then, as ever, interpret it if you would. Morning to you.
Good morning, Nick. That's right, the latest inflation figures released this morning. We've been expecting them, of course, and we've known that they will be out of date the very second that they were published. That does not mean, however, that we can't learn anything from them. The Office for National Statistics said that in line with economists' expectations, inflation for the 12 months to February of this year came in at 3%. Now, that is still 1% above the Bank of England's 2% target. There had been an expectation, if you cast your mind back to those distant and heady days of about 3.5 weeks ago, that inflation would be on a downward trajectory over the course of this year, as indeed would interest rates. Well, we can see what's happened with interest rates. That rate-cutting cycle has been paused. We'll come back to that in a moment. The expectation now is that inflation will, of course, rise off the back of the energy price shock and indeed the wider disruption to the economy and to confidence caused by the war in Iran, even if it's over, as Donald Trump says, and it doesn't quite look as simple as that. So what does this mean? Well, it means that the Bank of England will continue to have to grapple with this. Economists now are debating whether the bank will just continue to hold interest rates or whether they will end up hiking them. That depends on where this crisis goes over the next days, but more importantly, weeks and indeed months. I'll just note that the 3% figure for the 12 months to February, there was during that a bit of a rise, as there always is an up and a down across different prices, a bit of a rise in household goods and clothes, offset by a fall in inflation in petrol. Well, I think we know that that is over. People can see that and feel that. And it's one of the most profound impacts in this sort of basket of inflation, if you like. So we know what's coming down the line with that. Expectations now that inflation, if this conflict continues the way it is, could be north of 4% by the summer.
Some people who won't be too worried about a bailout are the clever folk behind Revolut. And this is on your front page of City AM. Tell the listeners about that story.
Well, we always like to look for good news where we can find it these days. Revolut, as we previously discussed, has just achieved its fully fledged banking license, meaning that it goes from a humble fintech wallet to a full-blown bank that can now get involved in lending and mortgages and all sorts. They had their results out yesterday morning. They posted a 57% surge in group-wide profits to £1.7 billion. Pounds, and that's in profit. The valuation of this company now $75 billion. It comes as retail customers expanded by about 16 million globally. This London-born, London-based challenger, I think we can still just about call it a challenger, is continuing now to put its tanks on the lawns of traditional big high street banks. Their total customer base is 68.3 million now, many millions of those in the UK, and they are now going after the customer base of the high street banks. You may have seen the adverts. There's now a marketing war to lure in customers switching from major high street banks. So this is now going to become one of the most interesting dynamics to watch, not just on the high street, but in British financial services. Revolut continues its march.
Well, one in a view of the Daily Telegraph, one of Britain's biggest banks is National Savings and Investments, looking after around £100 billion for more than 26 million people. But there seems to be a bit of a scandal, or certainly a degree of chaos over payouts. What might have gone wrong here, Christian?
Well, from the sublime to the ridiculous, I think it's quite interesting that we should look at Revolut by many estimates, the future of banking, and that sector, not just the company itself, but that fintech sector being the future of banking. On the other hand, you've got National Savings and Investments, NS&I, which people might know for its premium bonds, etc. But it is effectively a branch of the Treasury or an agency of the Treasury. The Telegraph have got an extraordinary story on their front page today that points out, or has found out, I should say, that National Savings and Investments have been accused of shortchanging, among others, bereaved families by losing track of investments, delaying payouts and withholding premium bond prizes. The Telegraph says that families of deceased savers at this bank have been forced to call in lawyers and obtain cash, just to obtain the cash that's rightfully theirs. They've incurred thousands of pounds in additional costs. This is a taxpayer-backed institution with some pedigree, but it has not been doing terribly well. The Tories this morning are pointing out a sort of botched IT transformation project. This will land on the Chancellor's desk. It's a fantastic piece of reporting by The Telegraph. I think there is a new boss in town, and there is efforts underway to try to overhaul this institution, but Telegraph have discovered that complaints against NS&I have more than doubled in just over 3 years, to north of 160,000 in the first half of this year.
We might look at that in more detail later in the show. And lastly, they really don't know whether they're coming or going at HS2. We started the week by saying they might want to run the trains a little bit slower. Now, in fact, that could be wrong as well. Christian, can you deduce what's going on?
Well, I'm not entirely sure that I can, Nick, and I've covered this story for over 10 years. This is the £100 billion train line, due to come into action around, 2033, 2034, 2035, who knows? We've got a new chief executive who's setting out plans for how he's going to try and get this project back on track. He was due to report that to the Transport Secretary, Heidi Alexander. We were due to learn more about this quite soon, but actually any such update has been delayed to after the May elections. But there is still debate about whether these trains should slow down. And the reason for that is that they would have to build a bespoke test track, or wait until the full track is complete before they can test the trains at the speed they had intended to run them. And that will add huge costs to an already huge bill. So one suggestion is that we could ship these trains out to China and ask if we could test them on their tracks, or we could just run them a little slower, and that will save the expense of having to test them properly. So it is another fairly farcical twist in this great big boondoggle of a project that's been up and down and ripped up and redrawn and replanned so many times over the years.
A boondoggle is one of the more favourable words I think you could have picked. Christian, thank you. Christian May, Editor-in-Chief at City AM. I'm asking what the gift might be from Iran to President Trump. Yasmin says, is it a gift of tanning oil? Peter in Southampton, is it planning permission for a Trump Tower and casino resort in Tehran? I'll take more of those in a moment. Let's come to Dinesh in Oxford. Dinesh, would appear to see that the help as regards energy bailouts is going to those on benefits and those in work will have to pay. Your reaction to that? Dinesh, good morning. Thank you for holding, sir.
Morning, Nick. Good to speak to you. So, this is a deviation. I think it's a misdirection. The fuel companies have paid subsidies up to $17.5 billion every year. And there's a wider corporate subsidy that ranges from $87
billion. $17 billion a year?
Yes, and 17, and that's from research papers published online from Global Climate.
Gracious, I didn't know it was that much.
And Nick, we've been through a lot of these conversations in the past during COVID. I remember the industry representation for fuel bodies, a Scottish chap.
Right.
He came up with a round number of 100 billion when Liz Truss was in office, and that's the number which would. So we are facing a bit of a misdirection here. Why don't the corporate subsidies are pretty much benefits for companies who earn profits, taking away from taxpayers? I think there's an element of that. The people we are investing in are the future of a company, not corporates.
Really well put, Dinesh. Thank you for reminding me of that extraordinarily high figure. Have a good day. More calls on that in a moment. But at 7.42, let's go to other matters and hear from incoming Archbishop of Canterbury, Dame Sarah Mullally, speaking back in October.
I'm deeply honoured to have been called to serve as the 106th Archbishop of Canterbury. I take up this calling with trust not in myself alone, but in God who guides us all. May we be bold in hope, generous in spirit, and steadfast in love.
And what a carry-on from a nurse to the Archbishop of Canterbury. What a career this woman has enjoyed. Now, the Reverend Sally Hitchener is Rector of North Lambeth and an English Anglican priest and joins me now. Rector, 106 and at last a woman. The significance of that, let's start with that. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Nick. It is significant, actually. It's a big deal. And, I, you know, when I was little, it wasn't possible even for women to be priests. And within my career, let alone my lifetime, it's women have become priests, they've become bishops, and now we have finally an Archbishop of Canterbury. So in one sense, it's a big deal. But in another sense, tomorrow morning, she'll just have to get on with the job the same as she would if she was a man. So I think it's a really big step forward in women's equality. But now there's a job to do.
What does Dame Sarah bring to the post, in your view, Rector?
Dame Sarah's got a reputation for holding a steady ship. She's someone who who believes in process. She was a senior civil servant when she was chief nurse of the UK. And she has a huge amount of experience. She was Bishop of London for a long time. And I suspect was getting ready to retire when they asked her to consider being Archbishop of Canterbury. And actually she's coming into it a bit older than many archbishops do. She'll only have 6 or 7 years before she's 70 and has to retire. And so actually she's got a limited amount of time. And I think she'll actually approach it with a lot of energy because of that. I suspect she will be quietly getting things in order so that whoever comes after her can come with a more radical agenda there.
Rector, what are items number one and two on her to-do list, would you suggest?
Well, I suspect there's very mundane things on her to-do list. She has already started as well. But I mean, she's talked a lot about her commitment to prayer. She's just spent a long time walking to Canterbury.
Yes.
And I suspect every morning she wakes up and the first thing she does is try and pray. But I think in terms of issues to deal with, the issues the church is facing are there's global issues that are threatening the Anglican Communion in terms of our different opinions of women bishops, but also our different opinions on sexuality and the role of gay people within the church. And within the UK, there's questions around church numbers and how to invigorate a church to respond to our changing world. And I think those things are really key for the church at the moment.
Grateful for your time this morning. Thank you, Rector. Reverend Sally Hitchin, a rector of North Lambeth and an English Anglican priest. We'll take more calls on what would appear to be the direction of travel for the bailouts here. Peter, you'll be the next caller on that. But coming up after the news... Secretary Wes Streeting will be joining us as public satisfaction with the NHS is improving for the first time since 2019, but it's still at a rather meagre 26%. Wes Streeting after this. 7:45 LBC News headlines. Dominic Ellis.
Iran has suggested that President Trump is negotiating with himself after he insisted that Tehran badly wants a deal to end the war. Data released this morning shows the rate of inflation in the UK remained unchanged at 3% last month. And hundreds of teenagers are to take part in a 6-week trial of a social media ban in the UK. LBC weather, a mix of sunny spells and patchy rain for large parts of the country, some wintry showers on northern hills, a colder day, a high of 10 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne, where one lane's been closed on the M25 anti-clockwise between junctions 25 at the A10 and 24 at Potter's Bar, and that's because a van has broken down. Also, there are problems with the A40. It remains closed both ways between the Northern Roundabout and the Marylebone Flyover for the ongoing works. Now, the official diversion is via the M4 and the A4, but there are delays of about half an hour on the M4 eastbound heading on to the elevated section, and the A4 is also very busy, especially at the Hammersmith Flyover. That's also eastbound. Only one Woolwich ferry is running today because of the maintenance works. On the Underground, there are minor delays on the Bakerloo line, and Greater Anglia train services are delayed between Wickford and Southend, Victoria.
This is LBC.
Listeners, we interrupt the airwaves to share an incredible discovery. The reason why Britain hasn't been so great of late is because the country hasn't been eating enough Weetabix. We must get to work in rebuilding Great Britain, Bix by Bix. By delivering Weetabix to whoever plans the traffic diversions, to delivery drivers who can't seem to find your house, and people who don't stack the dishwasher properly. To Britain, we must say, have you had your Weetabix?
Call Nick Ferrari now, 0345 6060 973. This is LBC.
Train to Chichester. Flasks filled, snacks packed, all ready for Maisie's first stargazing adventure.
Come on, Maisie! Follow everyone up to the top of that hill.
Oh, look, that one's the plough.
Shooting star! Wow!
Oh, made it. Last train back and feeling cosmic. And it seems we have an astronaut in the making.
Download the Southern Railway app to book kids' tickets for £2 on off-peak journeys. Southern Railway, where every stop is a story.
Pain in my hip. I keep feeling dizzy. I'm getting migraines more often.
There's another way to contact your GP practice, by simply sending your symptoms and requests through their website or the NHS app. We're delivering an NHS fit for the future. Tap it, type it, and we'll take care of it.
Julia, how do you spell vertebrae?
Oh, just type pain in the neck.
Jay here knows that Zoopla can provide valuations for any home in the UK, so we can see what that new couple across the road might have paid.
Ooh la la.
Have a nose at what the curtain twitchers next door could sell for. And even see what his own place is worth.
Cool, look at that.
Plus, Zoopla lets you find and compare local estate agents if you do decide to sell up. Think of all those new neighbours you'll be able to snoop on, Jay. If you want to know, just ask Zoopla.
At AJ Bell, we believe every customer deserves brilliant service, which is just one reason we're rated excellent on Trustpilot. And we all trust pilots, with their smooth, captainy voices that make you feel like you'd let them land anywhere they like. Sorry, where was I? Right, AJ Bell, rated excellent by sexy pilots. I mean Trustpilot. I'm a flight risk. AJ Bell, feel good investing. The value of your investments can go up or down.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973.
7:49 is the time. You hear from Health Secretary Wes Streeting in just a moment. Just to tell you, as we are talking about the possible assistance as regards bailout, energy bailouts, in the next hour we'll be joined by Richard, now Lord Walker. He is the government's cost of living czar. He also, of course, runs Iceland. That's the company, not the country. He floated the idea of a profit cap. It seems to have been knocked down on the weekend. Richard Walker will be here, particularly as, of course, they're trying to direct how the bailout will come. We know that the inflation figures, that's not going to help. Whatever you think about Richard Walker, or Lord Walker, I'm so sorry, Lord Walker's idea, the fact that he runs Iceland as well, he is in touch with people who are on restricted budgets, so that's coming up later. But pleased to say, we can now bring into the conversation the Health Secretary. This is as public satisfaction with the NHS is growing for the first time since 2019, but it's still a pretty meagre level. The government's own answer to Mick Jagger, delivering satisfaction, is Health Secretary Wes Streeting, who joins me now. Good to have you on, Secretary of State. Well, it's progress, but it's pretty slim pickings. How do you respond? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. I would say that both the satisfaction figures themselves reflect the improvement that we're driving in the NHS. We've got waiting lists the lowest level in 3 years, ambulance response times the best they've been for half a decade, and even in winter we saw the four-hour waiting figures in A&E, the best performance for 4 years. But, and I'd be the first to say this, in every single one of those areas, we've still got waiting lists too high, ambulance response times too long, people waiting too long in A&E. So I would say what we're seeing in the NHS is grounds for optimism, but not cause for complacency. We are on the road to recovery, but there's a long road ahead, and I've got my foot down on the accelerator.
You've got your foot, you've got the pedal to the metal, but it's interesting, there seems to be an age disparity. Mm. Older folks, like me, seem pretty relaxed and happy with the NHS. Not so younger people. What do you put that down to, Secretary of State?
I think that there is an affinity and an affection for the NHS in this country, for people who, like me, believe this is the greatest institution our country has ever built. There are still some people alive in Britain today who remember the days where we didn't have an NHS.
I'm not that old, Mr.
No, you're, no, I'm obviously not talking about you, a mere spring chicken, Nick. But there will be people who have that in living memory in their families. For the next generation, I think this is a really important challenge for us in the NHS, because it's not just about getting the right care in the right place at the right time and younger people feeling the NHS is there for them when they need it. It's also about an NHS that gives them the same ease and convenience, choice and control as other services that we are using. And I'm not going to pretend that the NHS app will be as joyful as using Netflix, but it has more subscribers and it needs to be an easy interaction for younger people who need and expect convenient care, and that is what I aim to deliver.
So as you and your colleagues determine to drive up the satisfaction level, what are the next hurdles to clear, the next immediate hurdles to clear, would you say, Secretary of State?
So one of the things that I am conscious of is that the improvement that I am leading in the NHS at the moment and that we're seeing is driven by a number of large, improving trusts, and in some ways they are masking far too many trusts that are underperforming. So we're seeing overall performance improve, but if you live in a part of the country where your local trust is falling short of expectations, it doesn't matter if you're reading about someone else's hospital somewhere else in the country. You care about what's happening on your own doorstep. And that is why we are starting with a number of troubled trusts, five troubled trusts, sending in experienced NHS veterans to help lead turnaround with a new improvement regime. In some cases, that will mean moving on in a professional and respectful but firm way, underperforming NHS leaders. We've already been doing some of that. People won't have necessarily read about it because I don't want to humiliate people. But if you're not up to the job, thanks, but we need other people in. We're also taking the best of the NHS to those troubled trusts. So we're really tackling underperformance in the NHS. Over the next year, people will be able to see and experience improvements in the NHS app. We're continuing to modernise the way that services are run. And we are continuing to invest not just in our hospitals, but in neighbourhood health, in our in general practice, in those community services and care in people's home. So what I would expect to see, and what I intend to provide over the next couple of years, is not just better performance, but faster improvement.
I'm sure done with due dignity, but then more heads will roll at underperforming trusts, Mr. Streeting.
Yes, that's right. And look, similarly, I will stand by some of those chief execs that I've sent in who do have high pay, but they carry a lot of clinical risk. They're responsible for life and death services.
They earn more than the PM, of course, Mr.
Yeah, they do. And they could also be earning a lot more money working somewhere else in the private sector. And so we do need good people. And I know it's not the most popular thing to say, but I will defend those salaries if people earn them. And with those salaries and with that responsibility comes an obligation to make sure that people are performing. So we won't tolerate underperformance, and that's the message I'm sending in a speech to health leaders today.
Can we talk about the performance of one hospital, the Queen Elizabeth, the Queen Mother Hospital in Margate in Kent, which would appear to have waited 2 days before raising the alarm about the meningitis outbreak? I'm sure you've now been made aware of this. Your reaction, Secretary of State?
Yeah, so look, what happened was the patient came in on the Wednesday evening unwell. By mid-morning on Thursday, the staff suspected meningitis. Now, at that stage, they had 24 hours within which they should have notified the UK Health Security Agency. They did so in 26 hours. And while I can reassure people that it appears in this case that that delay did not have a material impact, we've not found evidence of onward transmission to other people through that delay that we would otherwise have traced faster. Nonetheless, we have that 24-hour standard for a reason, and I am taking this seriously.
Is the head going to roll down in Margate?
Well, they had already done what we asked them to do immediately in terms of improving their compliance and rapid reporting. And I have to say, beyond what happened there, the way in which the NHS Trust, the universities and colleges and schools in Canterbury, and the young people themselves have responded has been exemplary. Right. We've seen cases, confirmed cases and suspected cases beginning to fall. That's encouraging. I'm not complacent. We're not out of the woods yet. But we've responded rapidly, and I think we've contained this outbreak in the way that we needed to.
What would your advice be? You won't be surprised to hear that at the peak of the outbreak, we were being contacted by parents saying, should we have our children vaccinated? Mm. And the vaccination can run at north of £200. What is the official guidance, particularly students going home for the Easter break? What is the official guidance, Secretary of State?
So we have asked the independent expert advisers at the JCVI, which is the Joint Committee for Vaccination and Immunisation. They advise us in an evidence-based way on who to vaccinate, when and to what extent. I have asked them for fresh advice in light of this outbreak. I recognise that there are people who are interested now more so in vaccination. That is a good thing. I want to take on some of this conspiracy theorist anti-vax nonsense, but I've got to also respond in an evidenced
But what would your advice be to a niece or nephew? What would you tell them to do?
I actually wouldn't be telling people to go out and get a vaccination if the NHS isn't providing one, actually. I understand why people choose to do that, and I respect that choice. But I just actually tell people at this stage, just hold on for a minute. Let's see what the JCVI say, because if they advise that vaccination is necessary, you get it free through the NHS. So just bear with us while we get that scientific advice. Since this outbreak, we've actually now issued out over 10,000 vaccinations. to people in and around Canterbury connected with this outbreak. That's a Herculean effort for everyone involved. And I just want to give a shout out, actually, to the NHS leaders, the university leaders, school leaders, and the young people, students and people themselves who've come forward. It's been a brilliant effort, and I take my hat off to them.
All right, a couple of other matters in the last couple of minutes that we've got together. Can I talk to you about Morgan McSweeney's phone, this ongoing story concerning Peter Mandelson? The theft of the work device means that McSweeney's WhatsApp messages and texts to Lord Mandelson will now never be retrieved. Now, your senior colleague Steve Reed told my colleague Lewis Goodall on Saturday that the phone had been stolen prior to Lord Mandelson's appointment. The Met have confirmed that it was stolen in October 2025. Why did Mr. Reed mislead us, and are there texts on the phone that could be of great value?
Yeah, I thought you might ask that. So let me just answer on both counts. Firstly, I think what Steve Reed was referring to when he talked about the Mandelson business was the fact that Parliament had asked for the release of all messages. Morgan McSweeney's phone was stolen well ahead of that. And so I think the point Steve Reed was trying to make was at the time when Morgan McSweeney's phone was stolen, and given the degree of cynicism there is about this, Morgan McSweeney could not have known or foreseen that Parliament would have asked for the release of all of these messages in a rather unprecedented way. So I appreciate
But it was stolen post-appointment, of course, Mr. Streeting, as opposed to prior appointment, which is what Mr. Reed said.
It was, and it was reported to the police at the time. And I understand it's not a good look, and I know I can well understand that when politicians say it's raining, people look up at the sky to see if it's true. No one believes a word politicians say.
Well, this is like Boris Johnson's phone falling in the drink, isn't it?
Yeah, and you know, and I've seen some of the other comparisons online as well, which aren't particularly flattering in terms of, you know, other high profile missing phones. I understand the cynicism, but I think the point Steve was making was that at the time this was phone was stolen, it was reported to the police, and Morgan McSweeney could not have known that Parliament would ask for the release of all of his messages. I think the second thing to say is that through the process that the government has gone through to get messages from all of us who have communications with Peter Mandelson, I suspect, and including from Peter Mandelson himself, there will be a very large number of messages that will be released through that process anyway.
Last minute or so together, I saw you very quickly went up to that scene in North London, the site of those four ambulances that were destroyed. And in a related story, it is reported today that you are going to make it easier to dismiss racist or anti-Semitic doctors who are accused of those crimes in a new policy brought in by the Department of Health and Social Care, says the headline. How will that work in practice, Secretary of State?
So I have seen and experienced high-profile cases of NHS staff engaging in racism unapologetically, online, visibly. I've been in this very frustrating situation where if I call people out individually and challenge them, I might prejudice their cases with the regulator. But then worse still, these cases go in front of a regulator and they get off. And what this does, and it's not just about anti-Semitism, this applies to racism more generally, but we've had a particular problem, visible problem, online with anti-Semitism. I've got Jewish people in my own community who I represent as a local MP who've told me when they go into my local hospitals, they don't want to tick kosher on the dietary requirements. They don't want to tell people that they're Jewish because they're frightened that they might get treated differently by our National Health Service at a time of great vulnerability. And not only is that just appalling, it is also unsafe. There are often risk factors. If I take the BRCA gene, for example, which is a particular risk factor for Jewish communities, if someone is of Jewish ethnicity and background, we need to know from a patient safety point of view. If people, but more fundamentally, Nick, we've got a real problem here. I mean, there's a real rise in racism in our country generally, and we've got to take this seriously. All of us, every decent-minded person, can play a part in challenging that situation. I've got to tell you though, I have not known a level of fear and anxiety among Britain's Jews in the way that we see today. And people questioning whether Britain is a safe place to be Jewish. And I think that should shock and shame us. And even this week, as I looked upon the sight of four burned out ambulances, the broken glass on the synagogue next door, there are still people in our country who think we're spending too much time talking about anti-Semitism, what's all the fuss, and worse still, beneath those, what they might think are innocuous questions, is a really heavy dose of anti-Semitic racism. And we cannot stand for this. And that's why every decent person in this country needs to speak up. And why we as a government, we've got to take action. We are investing in security. We are taking action to discipline and get racists out of the NHS. We're investing in education, in schools. But this, the answer can't just be higher walls, thicker doors, more CCTV and more money spent at the problem. This is a hateful ideology. It needs to be beaten in the battle of ideas. We've got to call this out for what it is and go after it and build a common front in this country against racism of all types.
Well said, Mr. Streeting. Lastly, hopefully you've made you aware of an LBC story, the city's, London's only drug and alcohol detox unit for homeless people, a clinical suite at St Thomas's, will close next week due to financial pressures. This could be because government drug and alcohol grants are being frozen. Where should those vulnerable people go now, Mr. Streeting?
Well, thank you, Nick. You brought this to my attention this morning. I am going to go away and look at this. I look at homeless people on our streets. I look at people with drug and alcohol addiction. And it's no exaggeration to say, there but for the grace of God go I. Like, there are so many people in this country who are one or two missed paydays away from being homeless. I've seen drug and alcohol addiction in my own family, particularly one of my grandparents, my granddad, who was in and out of prison throughout my childhood, my mum's childhood. He had suffered terrible abuse as a child and a terrible relationship with alcohol throughout his life. So I've seen the worst of some of this. We can't write these people off. We can't just say it's all their fault. Quite the opposite. And we judge a society by how it treats its most vulnerable. So I've got to go and understand what's happened here. I'm not going to sit here as judge, jury and executioner on the decision. But it's my responsibility as health secretary to make sure we're providing the right care in the right place at the right time to people. So I'm going to go away and do that.
Grateful for your time today, Health Secretary Wes Streeting. 26%, but it's going in the right direction. And Mr. Streeting, the first to say there's more work to be done. Thank you, Mr. Streeting. 8:05, LBC News headlines.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, President Trump has insisted that Iran is desperate to make a deal to end the conflict in the Middle East. He's hinted at a very significant prize given to the US from Iranian negotiators related to oil and gas. Unconfirmed reports also suggest Washington has drawn up a 15-point plan for ending the war. But Iran's military spokesperson, Lieutenant Colonel Efrahem Zafrigari, has denied talks are taking place.
The strategic power you boasted about has turned into a strategic failure. If the world's supposed superpower could have escaped this predicament, it would have happened by now. Don't call your defeat an agreement. The era of your promises has ended. Your conflicts have reached the stage of negotiating with yourselves.
Overnight, Iran told the United Nations that non-hostile ships will be able to pass in future through the key oil route of the Strait of Hormuz. The announcement has pushed down the price of Brent crude to just under $100 a barrel. Inflation, as measured by the Consumer Prices Index, was unchanged last month at 3%. Soaring oil and gas prices caused by the war in the Middle East aren't reflected in February's official figures for the UK. Research suggests public satisfaction with NHS services has increased for the first time since the pandemic. It rose by 26% last year. That's up from an all-time low of 21% in 2024. But the British Social Attitudes Survey found that younger people were less happy with the service. The Health Secretary, Wes Streeting, has just told Nick the figures highlight an important challenge for health leaders.
It's not just about getting the right care in the right place at the right time and younger people feeling the NHS is there for them when they need it. It's also about an NHS that gives them the same ease and convenience, choice and control as other services that we are using. And I'm not going to pretend that the NHS app will be as joyful as using Netflix, but it has more subscribers and it needs to be an easy interaction for younger people.
300 teenagers in the UK are to take part in a six-week trial of a social media ban. The group will also test out time limits and curfews to assess the impact that screen time has on schoolwork and sleep. And Scotland's busiest railway stations fully reopened this morning, more than 2 weeks after a fire at a nearby building. The main part of Glasgow Central was forced to close while safety work was carried out on the damaged structure nearby. In the city, the FTSE 100 reopened a few minutes ago at 9,665. It closed up 71 yesterday. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.15. LBC weather, a mix of sunny spells and patchy rain for large parts of the UK through today. Some wintry showers on northern hills, a cooler day, a high of 10 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Wellness. What even is wellness? Cleanses, routines, regimes, biohacks, stacks, schedules, procedures, programs. I suppose so. But can it just be a cup of... Pucker Herbal Tea. Ah, pucker. Nothing beats nature.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call and WhatsApp message now 0345 60 60 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
It's 9 minutes after eight after that extended conversation with the Health Secretary. 9 minutes after eight on Wednesday, March the 25th. So let's get straight into our next conversation, which concerns the cost of living and the government's efforts to try and keep it down. Now, some of you might have seen a piece that was in one of your newspapers on Sunday, the Sunday Times, written by Lord Walker of Broxton, otherwise known as Richard Walker, executive chairman of Iceland, and now the government's cost of living czar, a post he took up, as I recall, in February. And he joins me now. Good morning, my lord. It's the first time I've spoken to you since that heady promotion. Thank you so much for deigning to speak with me. How are you?
I'm all right, Nick. Thank you. Still getting used to the title, but no, thank you very much.
Well, congratulations. Well done to you in all seriousness. So well done. Richard, I discussed this on the BBC. You might have seen this on the Sunday show, and it seems to make a lot of sense to me. Explain how what you, as you write, you're not against profits because that allows companies to invest, to build more Iceland stores, to employ more people, to bring prices down. How would it work in this instance, Richard?
And to pay lots and lots of tax as well. Yeah, so not against profit, but against profiteering. And look, you know, my comments on price gouging and temporary profit cap did cause a bit of a stir, but I think that's where I can add value, to be honest. I mean, what I was proposing a whole range of different ideas, and one of them was essentially a margin cap, a temporary crisis-driven, time-limited margin cap, because we know the input prices across the supply chain, from refinery to wholesale margin to the retail price through to the pump price, and we know the sell price. So other countries have done this in times of crisis. Greece actually has just introduced it, and it would be a very kind of time-limited intervention. Now, I did want to inject a little bit of debate to try and move things on and make things happen, and that's kind of the job that I've been brought in to do, I believe.
The immediate soundings from Westminster and Number 10 were not positive, your idea. I know you now call it a margin cap. How do you react to that? And what would other bosses say? You must mix in the circle of energy and oil chief executives and others. What would their reaction be, Richard?
Yeah, and I think, you know, the energy industry has pushed back hard, obviously protecting their own industry. And if they're not profiteering, then that's fine. There's nothing to worry about. And with regards to my ideas, I know that all of them can't be implemented, and that's fine. But what I want is for changes to start happening quickly. And that sort of independent thinking and urgency is why I was appointed to the role. But I do know that the government is bringing in and looking at a whole range of other options, given the fiscal kind of constraints that they have, to look at what is possible. I spoke to Keir on Monday about this. They are looking at a whole range of things, albeit, you know, that particular idea isn't in the mix at the moment.
You're a businessman to your boots. You come from a family of business people. Be honest, do you think there's profiteering going on?
I think we've seen the pump prices increase. And if you look at the spot price on some petrochemicals, I'm getting quite technical now, but things like polyethylene, the price of that, I mean, it sounds boring, but actually it's the price of pretty much everything other than food. There has been large jumps in the price of that. And that was an industry that had sluggish demand and overstocks and yet, you know, bounced 20-30%. What I would say, though, is that the market is bouncing around all over the place, depending on what the man in the White House says. And the news this morning, at least, is maybe a little bit more optimistic. And I've no doubt the oil price will follow that. I haven't looked this morning. So we just need to take a pause and settle. And first and foremost, remember that we do have some protections in place at the moment, particularly for households. So we've got the energy price cap, warm home discount, and fuel duty freeze until September, at least. So there is a whole range of stuff, which means that we just, yes, the government needs to be urgent and move at pace, but actually the consumer at the moment doesn't need to panic.
What about this idea floated that the Rachel Reeves expected to limit any energy bill bailouts to those who are on benefits, i.e. those in work, would have to fund it? It's causing a degree of consternation in some quarters. Lord Walker?
I fully agree with it, to be honest. I mean, in 2022, the Truss government had applied a pretty blunt instrument. I think it cost north of £40 billion, which was support to everyone, including people like me, which seems a bit daft. So I think any support that is brought in, it's absolutely right to try and target it to those most vulnerable households, the lowest income households, for sure.
Everybody knows that Iceland, your executive chair there, that you ensure that it is as cost-effective as you possibly can for your customers. What are the pressures you see coming for folk who do their weekly or daily shop in Iceland, Richard?
It's a good question because, you know, other than energy, which we've been talking a lot about, obviously the price of food is important. And actually, the reason why I'm not panicking is, yes, there's always pressures on across our supply chain, but actually, we're not seeing big implications at the moment. And that's for a variety of reasons. First and foremost, we learnt the lesson of Ukraine. We're fully hedged on our cost of energy that we pay, all those fridges and freezers, through to at least next year. We're not going to suffer a big jump in energy costs. Secondly, the Strait of Hormuz is about oil, and yes, things like fertilizer, but it's not food. None of our gear, as we call it, none of our product comes through the Strait.
Nothing in Iceland comes through the Strait of Hormuz, Richard, just to clarify.
No.
Good Lord.
No,
nothing. Okay, right.
So I actually, as well as kind of price stability, I don't see supply instability either. So I think at the moment we're okay. And then finally, reasons to be cheerful, that there are rumours that non-hostile vessels may be allowed through anyway, the Strait of Hormuz this morning. So, you know, let's see.
We're entering the fourth week. Noting what you said about Ukraine, and that's fantastic that you guys have hedged all the way through the year. I mean, at what point might you get nervous? If we're talking like this, say, in another month's time, would you be nervous then, Rich?
I mean, you know, we're constantly monitoring it, and it's not that I'm relaxed about it. We're taking it very, very seriously, but we'll have to see. I mean, clearly, the best solution is an end to this war, and the fact that negotiations are happening or may be happening is a good thing, and that's where the full focus needs to be, but also making sure we've got a whole range of policies and interventions ready should they be needed.
Lastly, can we conclude how you concluded your piece in the Sunday Times? And to any listener who's not seen it, I urge you to try and have a look. It's a very powerful piece and very punchily written. You conclude by saying how you think you will be judged as this champion or czar. Of course, explain to the listeners what you write and how you see it. How will you be judged in this new role?
Well, I don't want to hang about and become part of the furniture in number 10. I'm here to make a difference and apply some pace and urgency. So I've said I'll give it to the end of the year. And if by the end of the year, consumers feel like, firstly, they've got a few extra pennies in their pocket, but secondly, they have a government who gets it, who understands and who's fighting for them, because the cost of living pressures aren't just about the basic cost of things. It's also a sense of injustice and a feeling that a system maybe isn't on your side. So that's why we're looking at the big stuff like energy, but also we're looking at a whole range of consumer harms like contracted services and midterm price hikes and vet bills and everything else in between, because it is the little pernicious things in life that trap people, that add up and that just feel like a grind. So I've got a sense that the cost of living crisis is about the raw cost of things, but it's also a feeling that, you know, we need a system and a government that's working for us.
Really enjoyed our conversation. Thank you, Sean. Well, congratulations again on your promotion. Thanks, Richard. Lord Walker, Executive Chairman of Iceland and the government's cost of living czar or champion, will take your reaction to that. A margin cap is how it's been called, but not a lot of enthusiasm, it has to be said, from government circles. Also after the news.
It's been described as one of the largest mass evictions by a private landlord. Residents handed Section 21s before a ban on no-fault evictions comes in from May. I'm LBC's Henry Riley in Colliers Wood.
Henry will file that report after the news. We've got to 8:18. LBC News headlines, Dominic Ellis.
Iran has suggested President Trump is negotiating with himself after he insisted Tehran badly wants a deal to end the war. The health secretary has told Nick he's taking reports the NHS waited 2 days before raising the alarm about the Kent meningitis outbreak very seriously. And inflation, as measured by the Consumer Prices Index, was unchanged last month at 3%. LBC weather, a mix of sunny spells and patchy rain for large parts of the UK. Wintry showers on northern hills, a high of 10 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Quite a few problems on the trains now. Firstly, London North Western services aren't running between Watford Junction and St Albans Abbey. It's because the train's broken down. And Chiltern Railways are delayed by about 20 minutes between Marylebone and Aylesbury Vale Parkway because a train broke down earlier. On the Underground, there are minor delays on the Metropolitan line and also on the Bakerloo line. On the roads in Wembley, there's been an accident on Neasden Lane North eastbound, and as a result, it is very busy on the approach. Also, the problems with the A40 continuous. Well, it remains closed both ways between the Northern Roundabout and the Marylebone Flyover for the ongoing works. Now, the official diversion is via the M4 and the A4, and both of those roads are very busy, especially eastbound.
This is LBC.
Right, who's all in for Cancer Research UK's Race for Life? Sunday Leaguers, dog lovers, bait clubbers, banger dancers, baby ravers, potters. Whether you walk it, jog it, or run it, go all in against cancer. All in to help fund life-saving research. Sign up now and save 50% off entry to your local 3K, 5K, 10K or Pretty Muddy event. Search Race for Life. Discount ends April 19th, 2026. T's and C's apply.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973 LBC.
Whether your dreams are calling you outdoors to reconnect with nature or towards moments of pampering and relaxation to rejuvenate your soul, you can bank on Lloyds to help make it happen. We've been asking listeners what their aspirations are for the year ahead to help create the ultimate prize packages to inspire that first step. Enter now for your chance to win one of three incredible experiences thanks to Lloyds and the nation's aspirations. Choose the prize for you at lbc.co.uk.
This Wednesday, the £12 million Lotto jackpot must be won.
Must be won?
Yes. Lotto from the National Lottery. It could be you. Estimated jackpot. Rules apply. 18 plus.
My name is Karen, and this is my NHS story. You don't realise how blind you are until you have cataract surgery. I was referred to a surgical hub, and they booked us in for an operation. It was about 3 weeks before I was there. It's very, very quick.
The government is opening more surgical hubs, with more than 120 already operating across England, so the NHS can be there for all of us when we need it. Find your closest one at gov.uk/NHS fit for the future.
A southern train is a place where family moments become more peaceful. Where you can spread out and a game of I Spy gets a scenic upgrade with snacks, stories and the occasional sheep for a bonus point. Less stress, more yes, with kids' tickets for £2 at southernrailway.com. Terms apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
A margin cap, a profit cap, stopping the gouging, stopping the profiteering. What confidence do you have? Peter, you'll be the first call on that. Just take a couple of the emails. I haven't done enough of those. Glyn says it was already being reported some benefit claimants were out-earning people who were working. Before they get help with energy bills, we're being taken for mugs. Vic says, for someone who works in the emergency services, I'm dismayed yet again to find my paycheck is going to be further cut to pay for those who do not work. Peter in Stirling, thank you for hanging on the line. The point you want to make, Peter, good morning.
Good morning, Nick. I don't see how anyone can have a problem with the margin cap. I've gotten so Most mornings I have a call with my friend over in Chicago while she's driving to work.
And
within a week of the conflict starting, prices at the pump had gone up by about, I think, between 40 and 50 cents on
the pump.
She
paying? She's paying north of $4 a gallon now, isn't she?
I think, yeah, it's around $4 a gallon. And this is for a country that is supposedly self-sufficient in petroleum. So I had a look it up, and apparently it's because it's the global prices. So America isn't experiencing a shortage of gas, but their prices are going up. So the logic carries through. If we leave these companies to it, and the same will be here, and we say, in a moment of crisis, you can do what you like. We're going to trust you to not profiteer. Honestly, I think if even 10% of the companies are still profiteering, we need to have a rule for all of them.
And what would that rule be?
I think the margin, I don't fully understand the margin cap, but I think a restriction on how much profit you can make within that time makes sense. I'll go a bit closer to home here. Scotland has higher than average energy costs, energy bills in the UK.
Hmm.
In any given year, it exports between 30 and 35% of its energy.
Is that right?
So why are we paying higher average costs when a third of Scotland's energy is being exported? So it does seem strange, doesn't it?
Lastly, your friend in Chicago, does she give an indication of how the American public are towards Trump and this war? Or is she a diehard Democrat, or indeed a diehard Republican, and it's difficult to get a sort of moderate sense of what she might say about other folk?
I would say she's not very political, but she's a fervent Democrat. And I think from everyone I've heard from around her side of things, yeah, it's exhausting and it's confusion. But also, when I've looked online and had interactions with even like some diehard Republicans, it is just this questioning of, why are we out there? Like, what are we doing? I'm seeing prices going up at the pump. What's going on? So,
and of course, US military personnel losing their lives. Let's not lose sight of that. Peter, thank you, and thanks for hanging on the line. Rachel in Northampton, do you think the government can stop this profiteering? Good morning.
Good morning. Sorry, Nick, I'm first-time caller.
No, thank you very much. Nothing to worry about. Don't be nervous, for goodness sakes. I've been getting away with it for years.
my point was really that the Chancellor has said that she's going to put something in place towards the end of the year when we get back to winter, when obviously everybody's putting the heating back on.
Mm-hmm.
But my parents live in a rural area. They're 82 and 83. They've never been on benefits. They've worked all their lives and have pensions, but they only have oil. They don't have gas.
And that's more than doubled, hasn't it, the cost of heating oil?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And they don't have any choice. So, okay, you know, hopefully soon the heating can go off, but they're still having to use that oil to heat their water.
Yeah, of course they are.
They have no choice. But all she actually is looking at is looking at the end of the year when the heating comes back on. Like I said, they are rural and they're older, which the government clearly don't like.
Mm.
And it's the profiteering of the oil companies. Literally, as soon as this conflict started, they thought, well, we need to get some oil. And the price was literally through the roof. But they don't have any choice.
What should the government... If you go back to Liz Truss, and I'm not a cheerleader for a lot of what Liz Truss did, but the energy package that she brought in after Ukraine benefited everyone. It was hugely expensive. It was 40-plus billion, but it benefited everyone. Is that what, to look after your mum and dad, is that what we should be looking at now?
They need to put something in place, not just for those people that are on benefits. I don't know what they need to do, but they need to do some cap. And if it's just the oil companies just not profiteering, that's not actually, you know, that is affecting their profits rather than the, you know, everybody else with their taxes. You know, we all work. I'm going to work in a minute. We all pay our taxes. We're not sitting at home receiving benefits. So, no, we don't need to be paying any more taxes, but the oil companies can cut on their profits because some of this oil was literally sitting in tanks waiting to be delivered.
Absolutely right. Rachel, I don't know what you had to be nervous about. Your first-class job. Will you give my best wishes to your parents? I've got to break off now, Rachel, because there's some breaking news. But again, be like Rachel. First time, first class. Get it off your chest. Get it on the radio. My best wishes to your parents. 8:27, you're listening to LBC News breaking at this time, and two men have been arrested in connection with that attack at Golders Green on that community Jewish ambulance service. Two men in connection. This is confirmed. Arrests made in North West London and Central London, respectively. Arrests on ground suspicion of arson with intent to endanger life. Both men have been taken to a London police station, which will not be identified, where they will remain in police custody. Searches are going on at two addresses. That news just breaking. More on that when we get it. Tim in Tunbridge Wells. Tim, is there profiteering going on? If so, what does the government do? Good morning.
Well, I think we've got to get to a consensus on what's acceptable levels of profit and what's not. You know, in my business, a profit is a byproduct of getting everything right. Mm-hmm. And I think what we can't be seen to do is profiteer on everyone else's misery and hardship. And I think the trouble at the moment is we're in challenging times regardless of what's happening in Iran. You know, and I think we're all acutely aware that inflation is high, interest rates are high, and, you know, oil and gas companies need to react sensibly and say, we have got a supply of gas within our storage, so therefore we should continue to operate at the same level of margin we were operating before.
So gross profit for BP, I stress that word, was in the region of £50 billion. I don't know what it nets out at, but 50. What is it? And obviously, they need that because then they can hopefully build more petrol stations or expand and employ more stuff. What is an acceptable level of profit?
Well, I think that needs to be calculated fairly because obviously they've got shareholders that they have to report to, and people invest into these companies as part of their pension plans. So I think it's got to be done fairly. But I think by now we should have a policy. When we're facing this adversity, we should already have a policy in place that allows businesses to have certainty of what happens in those circumstances.
Well said, Tim. Thank you for that. Have a good day down in Kent. I love profit. I believe in profit. I believe in capitalism. It means that in Richard Walker's case, he builds more Iceland stores in an oil company. They perhaps build more petrol stations. I have no idea. But is there a point when you're making profit out of a situation such as this, a restriction in oil supplies, that you have a margin cap? As Richard Walker's rephrased it. Tim, thank you. Marshall in Wembley. Marshall, you're in the radio. What can you tell me? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. So basically, I was just saying earlier, I mean, we listen to a majority of your callers nowadays complaining about companies making profits, whether that's in oil or food, drink, or wherever it may be. But we've got to understand, we live in a capitalist society. There's free enterprise, and profit is good. It allows these companies to reinvest back into their businesses.
Yep. Totally agree.
Giving up better services. So, and what I do find nowadays is a lot of people who do complain are the ones who have, in my experience, who I know of, lived beyond their means over these years, driving big fancy cars, and unfortunately they've never been prepared to save for a little bit of a rainy day. And now they're too stubborn to forego their lifestyle, to dip into savings, pay for a little bit of extra petrol if you need to. I mean, it's not going to break the bank, is it?
Marshall, thank you for that. The line's a bit crackly, but you got your point across. Thank you. Ashley in Beaconsfield says, this margin cap, as put forward on your show by Lord Walker, is a very good idea. I'm a capitalist. I have no issue with profit. However, I don't think they should stop at petrol. A margin cap on food will also help bring food prices down. I work in that industry. Some of the margins on food are mind-blowing. Aren't some of the greatest margins actually in clothing as well, aren't they? Don't they sort of pay, I don't know, a quid for a T-shirt that gets sold for 15 or whatever it might be? Anyway, we will return to that. And then later in the show,
I think this is a really important challenge for us in the NHS, because it's not just about getting the right care in the right place at the right time. It's also about an NHS that gives them the same ease and convenience as other services that we are using.
The satisfaction figures are out for the NHS, and Wes Streeting has told us more in an extended interview. We'll come back to that in the next hour. 8:31, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrara, and LBC News Time. Dominic Ellis.
Starting with some breaking news, as you've been hearing with Nick, two men have been arrested in connection with an arson attack on four ambulances in North London. Four vehicles belonging to a Jewish community group were set alight in Golders Green on Monday. President Trump has insisted that Iran badly wants a deal to end the four-week conflict in the Middle East, but Tehran has mocked Mr. Trump's claims of peace talks, suggesting that he's negotiating with himself. And the Health Secretary, Wes Streeting, has told Nick he's taking reports the NHS delayed raising the alarm about the first meningitis case in Kent very seriously. Doctors have a legal duty to report cases of the infection as soon as they're suspected. LBC weather, a mix of sunny spells and patchy rain for large parts of the UK. Some wintry showers on northern hills, a colder day, a high of 10 degrees.
on the latest episode of The News Agents.
Why was the stock market in America moving in such a curious way ahead of Trump's statement on Iran? Are some people getting filthy rich on the back of insider trading?
Get the latest episode of The News Agents with Emily Maitlis, John Sopel and Lewis Goodall. Listen or watch on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Hi, I'm Sava, founder of Cool You, the daddy of air conditioning. For over 15 years, Cool You have specialised in installing our fully internal aircon systems throughout London with no mess, no fuss and no external condenser. And from April the 10th to the 19th, come and meet me and the team at the Ideal Home Show, London Olympia. Daddy, daddy cool. Cool You, for a cool, comfortable home.
Okay, who's all in for Cancer Research UK's Race for Life?
We're doing Pretty Muddy.
It's an obstacle course.
A swim for kids.
Runners.
Walkers.
Book clubbers.
Knit clubbers.
Tenpin bowlers.
Choir singers.
Lake swimmers.
Gardeners.
Whether you climb it.
Slide it.
Or crawl it.
Go all in against cancer.
All in to help fund life-saving research. Sign up now and save 50% off entry to your local 3K, 5K, 10K or Pretty Muddy event. Search Race for Life. Discount ends April 19th, 2026. T's and C's apply.
Do you know your state pension age? No. Maybe you're not sure. Or you don't know how to check. It's so quick and easy to check online. All you need is your date of birth. Knowing your state pension age helps you think about your future. So check yours today. Search state pension age on gov.uk and simply enter your date of birth. State pension age. It's good to know.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
8:34, back to the cost of living czar and some of his proposed measures in a moment. A margin cap, profit cap, perhaps a little bit ugly in the corridors of business, big business. Let's work out what the net profit is. I've quoted the gross profit of BP, 55-something million. What do they net out at? It's probably going to be considerably less than 55, because it's an expensive company to run. And maybe throw in Centrica as well. We'll come to that as we talk more. But to other matters, what sort of guidance is this? Transgender girls must leave Girl Guiding by September the 6th, the organisation has decreed, after announcing last year they would no longer be eligible for membership. It means that trans girls, born male but identifying as female, will no longer be able to attend guides, brownies or rainbows from that time. Girl Guiding said the announcement would allow affected members to decide when, between now and September, they feel ready to leave. Those are their words. It said any trans girl or trans woman who volunteered in a role reserved for women would have to move to a role open to all volunteers by that date. Trans Plus Solidarity Alliance, the campaign organisation, said the change showed inclusive organisations being bullied into excluding people against their will. Let's turn to Paul Levine, who's a director at Translucent. In a sentence, could you tell me what Translucent is? Good morning to you.
Yes, good morning, Nick. Yes, Translucent is an organisation that basically advocates for trans rights in this terrible time where trans rights are basically being eroded away.
And I understand you have a personal interest in that. Is this correct?
That's correct, yes. My involvement is simply because I have a trans daughter who at the age of 20 discovered her true identity. This was about 11 years ago. And my interest, obviously, I had no understanding or knowledge, like most people, at that time of what it meant to be trans. And there was very little information about. So at that point, obviously, started to learn everything. And at that point is when I started to realise how much negativity, hatred and intentional targeting there has been and has continued to grow throughout the years, and that's what got me involved with Translucent.
The Girl Guiding decree, what will it mean to trans girls and trans young women in your view, Paul?
Well, it's another horrific step. I mean, the whole thing about being trans is all you want to do is just be accepted as who you are. It's quite simple. You don't want to do anything. You just want to be treated as normal, just accepted as who you are. And for young trans kids, and please, let me start off by saying, when people turn around and say there's no such thing as trans kids, there are 262,000 trans adults in the UK. Every single trans adult was a trans kid. You don't suddenly become trans and suddenly materialise at the age of 18. Just like every gay person, they didn't discover it until a certain point, but you become trans. So there are trans kids, and your understanding of being trans can vary dramatically, and when it actually sort of comes, some of them know from a very, very early age, they know they're trans, and you just want to be accepted. And for a kid in particular, to not be accepted and to have no place where you can feel safe, is just appalling, and it's causing some real harm. And I think all you have to do, is just look at the actual guidance that's come out, from Girl Guides, and you see the bottom section is all about healthcare and mental health care and how to get helped, because they know the impact that that is going to have, that this is going to severely impact on a lot of girls' mental health feelings.
I have to put to you a counter argument. You talk about feeling safe. There is an argument, yep. And I'm sure you've heard it, that others would say, I don't want my daughter going away on, I don't know if Girl Guides go camping, I have no idea, but going away on a camping trip with someone who was actually born a man and is now trans. I don't expect you to necessarily agree with the argument. Do you at least recognise that argument?
Of course, absolutely. And unfortunately, these arguments and these things are all born of fear and scaremongering. This is no different if you go back 50, 60, 70 years ago to exactly the same thing saying about gay people. You know, we don't want to be in showers with gay people. We don't want to be alone. They're going to attack us. It is identical. And unfortunately, it's the same rhetoric that's being rehashed. The thing is about trans, as I said, all they want to do is be accepted. And just get on and be treated as normal. And everything that's gone on, it has to be evidence-based. And all of these fears and all these claims, they are just claims. In every area you look at, where trans people are being targeted, there is absolutely no evidence to back any of these claims.
Just lastly, as a dad, when your daughter decided that she was trans, what was the reaction? What did you see in her? Did she become more fulfilled? How would you describe it?
Absolutely. Do you know what? I think one of the best stories she ever told me, one of the things that, I mean, it sort of gets me every time I say it, was when she started, she went out one evening, and it was the first time she'd gone out as her true self. She was obviously wearing female clothes. She was wearing makeup. She went out, she went to bed, and she was at a friend's house, and she didn't take her makeup off because she got back to bed. Anyway, she woke up the next morning, and when she woke up, she happened to be looking straight at a mirror, and she said immediately a smile came on her face because she saw for the first time when she woke up her true self. She actually saw a reflection of who she really is on the inside. And since she has become and realised who she is, you know, she's had no issues whatsoever. The only issues, obviously, are the problems that are being caused now by this Supreme Court ruling, which was supposed to have brought clarity and has done nothing of the sort and has just caused absolute problems throughout all walks of life. There is no clarity whatsoever, there are greater problems now than there were before.
Enjoyed our conversation. Paul Levine, thank you for your time. You're director at Translucent, and you have a trans daughter. If you've views on girl guiding and their views, their decisions, do let me know about that. But let's come back to how much profit is too much profit. Now, if this figures for BP, which of course was once British Petroleum, I'm quoting in dollars, I got it right, that their gross was around $54 billion, but that nets down to around $7 billion. That's obviously the cost of running things. So these are broad brush, okay? So that's in the world of fuel. Centrica, owners of British Gas, operating profit, £814 million. That was down from the previous. That was obviously 2025. So this is the sort of money we're talking about. Now, again, that allows those companies to invest, to create new industries, possibly even new petrol stations in BP's case. I have no idea whether they own their own stations. But how much profit is too much profit? Daniel's in Mansfield. Daniel, what would you say? Good morning.
Morning, Nick. Well, I've always said for a while we need capitalism because, well, straight up, I'm tired of people calling it capitalism because we're not a capitalist country. Let's get that one thing
what,
right.
What are
if we were fully capitalism, I don't know what we are. I think we're bending over to businesses, but we're not a capitalist country because if we were, businesses would fail without the help of government.
How are
the
we bending over
to
business?
Bail out to Britain.
Daniel, how do we bend over towards business? I don't understand.
Okay, then. We're talking about BP price gouging right now.
Well,
we're talking about the price of fuel. So when was the last time you went to the BP service station and bought a bottle of Coke? Now, tell me, they haven't been price gouging on everything like that for the last 50 years.
But hold on. So, you have a choice. You don't need to buy your soft drink from that station. You can go to the high street, you can go to a supermarket, you can go to a corner shop. You don't have to, whereas you have to buy theirs or Esso's or Shell's or someone's fuel.
No, you know, okay then, so why is BP, apparently the producer of it all, costing more for a litre than a supermarket? So the producer, who actually sold it to a supermarket, so you're telling me these lot have been price gouging? It's the same with water, it's the same with electricity, it's the same with energy.
I mean, I think in some instances the supermarkets deliberately keep their prices low because they want you to go there, you fill up your car, and then you just cross the car park and you go and shop in their store. I think that's the thinking there, isn't it, Dan?
Well, let's turn the price of unit then, a unit of electricity in the how it's produced, not by the price of gas, not by the highest one. Let's start sorting this energy crisis out. If we're producing renewable energy, let's start charging people renewable energy prices. Now, let's not start charging the gas prices so we can keep paying them more so they can extract more gas.
Right.
This is an absolute scam that is just going off, and it's going to keep going off because the government's just involved.
All right. I don't see what you'd want as a difference, and I think actually running a business in this country at the moment is damn tough, I would say, Daniel, but I appreciate your view. That's what a conversation is about. Thank you. 8:43, Adam in St Albans. Adam, is there gouging going on? Good morning.
Yeah, hi, Nick. No, I don't necessarily think so, because it'd be very, very hard to work that out in terms of, you know, the amount they've got there and then moving the prices up. I think we need to let free markets throw from here. Throwing $40 billion in subsidies onto the government debt pile is absolutely insane. If we wish to do something like that, we can then tax the petrol or the companies that are earning down the road by making these small payments.
How would you do that? What would be what is an acceptable level of profit?
Well, the hardest thing is onto that it's against capitalism, but there's obviously, I believe, in there, there's sort of 76% taxes on some of the drillers and some of the exporters already. We need to stop putting debt onto the government bill. We need to work in this all together and to work on it correctly.
Adam, thank you. More calls on this coming up in the next hour.
London's first and only detox centre for homeless people is closing because of government cuts. I'm LBC's Shivani Sharma at St Thomas's Hospital with the exclusive.
Or we should put the caveat on that now. When told almost exactly an hour ago about this, the Health Secretary, Wes Streeting, says he will look into this, but we'll bring you that full report in the next hour. It's 8:45, LBC News Headlines, Dominic Ellis.
Two men have been arrested in connection with the arson attack on four ambulances in North London on Monday. Iran has suggested President Trump's negotiating with himself after he insisted Tehran badly wants a deal to end the war. And the Health Secretary has told Nick that he's taking reports the NHS delayed raising the alarm about the first meningitis case in Kent very seriously. LBC weather, a mix of sunny spells and patchy rain for large parts of the UK, wintry showers on northern hills, a high of 10 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. There are delays on the M25 anti-clockwise from Junction 2 at the A2 to the Dartford Tunnel. It was after a lorry broke down earlier. It's actually been recovered now, but it's still very slow. Delays of about half an hour on the A2 westbound from the Danson Interchange to the Kidbrook Interchange. Also very busy on Neasden Lane North at the Neasden Interchange. And that was after an accident that happened earlier, but all the lanes are now back open. The A40 remains closed both ways between the Northern Roundabout and the Marylebone Flyover for the ongoing works. On the trains, London and Northwestern can't run between Watford Junction and St Albans Abbey. Chiltern Railways are going to and from Marylebone now, but with delays. And on the Underground, there are minor delays on the Metropolitan line and also on the Bakerloo line.
This is LBC.
Right, what's for dinner tonight? Co-op's meal range served is prepped and ready for easy cooking. Choose from a selection of Mexican-inspired mains and sides and dinner is served for two. All for just £8 for Co-op members. Co-op. Owned by you. Right by you.
Ends 5th of May. Selected products. Co-op group membership required. Subject to availability. T's and C's and range at co-op.co.uk/served.
This is LBC. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app. Download it now from your app store.
My name is Chevy, and this is my NHS story. Over a couple of days, I was getting quite intense pain on the left side of my stomach. So I called my doctors and then was referred to the Eltham CDC. It was literally a seamless, stress-free day. There was no anxiety or worry.
The government is opening new community diagnostic centres, with many already available 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, so the NHS can be there for all of us when we need it. Find your closest one at gov.uk/NHS Fit for the Future. Available England-wide.
What's the best present you ever got for your birthday? I bet it wasn't as life-changing as £1 million. Every week with the birthday draw, there's £1 million to be won. And you can enter from as little as £1, or via post. Enter by midnight on Sunday, and your special day could win you £1 million. Visit thebirthdaydraw.com. Is it your lucky day? From Global and ITV. 18 plus, UK only, no purchase necessary.
Sorry to interrupt your day, but I've just been diagnosed with dementia, and I'm going to need your help. I'll need help when I can no longer button a shirt or recognise my own family. My daughter will need help too. I worry this could ruin her life. And we will all need help to find a cure to end the devastation of dementia. I can't do this alone.
It will take a society to beat dementia. Alzheimer's Society.
Pain in my hip. I keep feeling dizzy. I'm getting migraines more often.
There's another way to contact your GP practice, by simply sending your symptoms and requests through their website or the NHS app. We're delivering an NHS fit for the future. Tap it, type it, and we'll take care of it.
Julia, how do you spell vertebrae?
Oh, just type pain in the neck.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
8:49, 11 minutes before 9, coming up after 9 o'clock, I can't get no satisfaction. Health Secretary Wes Streeting talking about satisfaction findings within the NHS. Before that, we'll come back to more calls about a margin cap, otherwise known as a profit cap, and indeed, girl guides now closing the door. You've got to be out if you're a trans girl or trans young woman, out by September. Now, coming out tomorrow is Betrayal, a new book from the number one best-selling author Tom Bower. This is a look at the Sussexes in particular, power, deceit, the fight for the future of the royal family. Royal biographer Tom Bower joins me now. Good to see you again, Tom. From memory, it's about 4 years since your last book on the Sussexes. What have you learnt over those 4 years? Good morning.
Good morning to you, my dear Nick. Well, you know, at the time when I first wrote the book, Revenge, 5 years ago, the Sussex was riding so high. They had the Netflix series, there was Harry and his best-selling autobiography, Spare. Meghan was going to launch herself as a domestic goddess in her as-ever Netflix series. And then all began to sour. It's a story over the last 4 or 5 years of decline and heading towards desperation. And it's a fascinating, gripping story of a global couple who sought celebrity and influence, and it's all going sour for them.
The reviews are in, and they're mostly positive. One aspect pulled out by one reviewer is, what do the Sussexes need to learn about the way the firm, the family, dealt with Prince Andrew? When they see problems, they close ranks, Tom.
They do, and I think that Harry and Meghan must be absolutely terrified now that what was deemed to be absolutely impossible to believe, that you could strip Andrew of his titles because of complicated acts of Parliament and everything, they fudged the Constitution and just did it with a signature on a letter's patent. And if the Sussexes misbehave anymore, I can imagine, if not Charles, at least Prince William, when he becomes king, stripping of their titles and being rid of the problems in Montecito.
How fulfilled, or otherwise, is Prince Harry?
Oh, I think he's feeling very, very miserable at the moment. It's a shame. Look, he was a hugely loved figure, second in popularity to the Queen, and then along came Meghan, who was his safety net and great lover and great friend and everything. He didn't realise that she was really manipulating him, encouraged him to feel grievances about everything, not least about his brother William and the amazing fact that he become king and not Harry, and Meghan was unhappy she wouldn't become the Queen. And I think he's gone to California. It was great in the beginning, but it's a ruthless society there. You know, if you're not up, you're going down. And they're going down, and no longer as wanted and as popular as they used to be. And so it's a great struggle for him.
From the people with whom you speak for Betrayal, some of whom you identify, some of you, obviously you don't for journalistic reasons in that you can't give up your sources, how happy do you believe their union to be?
Well, I think it works still. I mean, I know that many people think they're heading for divorce and thought so the day that they were married. But I think there's a partnership, and she realises, unless she finds something unbelievably great, an alternative, that the relationship continues. They have their ups and downs, undoubtedly. But I don't believe there's imminent divorce.
Who's next in your sights, Tom Bauer?
I'm fascinated by Nigel Farage, Nick. I'm fascinated by, always fascinated by people who influence our lives, who seek to influence our lives, climb the top of the greasy pole. Nigel Farage is the joker in the pack. He's either going to be our saviour or a scaremonger. We don't know yet, and that's fascinating for me.
Saviour or undoing. OK, tomorrow's book is Betrayal, Power, Deceit and the Fight for the Future of the Royal Family. Tom Bauer, it's published by Bonnier, and you can get that book as, or I'm sure you can pre-order, you can get it now. Tom Bauer, thanks for your time. 7 to 9 is the time. Now, Girl Guiding have put out advice. As of the first week of September, a trans girl or a trans young woman will have to leave. Helen's in Southampton. What do you take from that, Helen? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Hi. I do agree that male children who identify as female children shouldn't be in Girl Guide, because two reasons. The first one is safeguarding, and it's not to say that male children who identify as females are no less likely to, as an 11-year-old, for example, in a shared dormitory to assault a female child than a male child who doesn't.
I mean, the gentleman, Paul Levitt, with whom I spoke from that organ, isn't that what we, you know, decades ago, people used to say about homosexuals? You know, you won't be safe in the changing room, whatever it might be. That's what we used to say about them, isn't it? I mean, I do think he had a point there.
Well, I suppose it's about data about male behaviour, isn't it? And the incidence of males, whether they're young children or adult males, assaulting females, and that's what it's based on. It's not saying it's perfect. Some females assault females. Mm, it's more about safeguarding. Okay. So there's a safeguarding. That's a very important point. And also, another element of that is, are girls, female children, expected to then use terminology and act as though they believe this male child is a female? Mm-hmm. Secondly, Girl Guides are set up as a charity to support female children. It was never set up to support identity. And girls need activities together to build confidence, because we know, on average, you get some very assertive women, of course, but on average, women take a back seat in many respects.
Of course, I think that's fair.
So that's the two things. It's not saying, I think children should be allowed to, male children, wear dresses, grow their hair long. I don't agree with young children that you are telling them things that are not correct, that you're telling them that they can mm-hmm. become a girl. A girl, in my view, is a female child.
But what of the trans girl who just loves being a brownie?
I think then you need other, like where you've got mixed groups, where you've got...
Oh, I see, so you have...
Where you've got male and female, and you...
Let's call them rangers. All right, I've just made that
up.
Oh, that's...
So they're not doing that. It's just that you can't expect female... You can't expect groups to allow males in.
I see what you're saying. Well, maybe there is an art, and I've just made the name up, so please don't... But you've got guys, you've got scouts, and you've got rangers. I mean, is that the solution? Helen, thank you. Have a good day. Last few minutes before we give you a news update. Let's come back to the idea of a margin cap. It's been rephrased from a profit cap. Let's get to some of the emails and texts you're sending. Susie Q says the price of fuel went up as soon as the increase was announced, even on fuel that had already been bought before the price hike. I didn't see the price coming down as fast on my way to work. Now the cost of a barrel has dropped. This comes in from Nigel. Of course, the uplift in petrol prices is profiteering. The claim it costs more for the petrol retailers to reorder their supplies is misleading. Completely ignores the fact that most retailers have 7 days credit provided by their suppliers. And if Wes Streeting or any of his team are still listening, they'll be delighted by Susie from Margate, who says, I was a Labour supporter. I was about to give up my Labour membership, but I'm listening to Wes today on LBC. I realise this is the man I want to be my Prime Minister. He's giving me hope, and I won't cancel my membership just yet. If Wes Sweeting or the team are listening, music to your ears, I would imagine. Let's talk about that. Is there gouging? Is there profiteering? What should a government do? Nathaniel's in Dover. G'day, Nathaniel. What are you going to tell me?
Morning, Nick. So, look, I'm all for businesses making money, but they are overstepping. So when I heard you start talking about this, I actually sat down and I've looked at the numbers online of what the wholesale is at the moment for diesel and petrol.
Go on.
So diesel at the moment is around about 67 pence wholesale with duty and VAT added on. You're at about £1.50 a litre when it arrives at the forecourt.
Paying a bit more than that now for diesel, I think, Nathaniel. I think you're in the 170s now.
178.9 is my local garage.
Oh, there we go. That wasn't a bad guess. Right, go on. Yeah.
So you're talking about 20p a litre plus on top of compared to what it used to be at like 5 or 6 pence.
Yeah.
So I don't see how they can turn around and say they're not profiteering when they've quadrupled their profit margin, sort of thing. At that point, I think you do need to look at capping the margins because the market clearly isn't keeping them in check.
No.
You know, there are people taking advantage of this.
When you hear the Prime Minister and the Chancellor say, we will not tolerate fuel gouging, it's just words, isn't it? I don't think they back it up at all.
I think it's because they've got people whispering in their ears who donate to their party, to be honest with you, who are saying, no, don't do that, don't do that. It's our interest not to. So I think there's too many people lobbying, by the sounds of it, to try and stop that from happening because it will affect their friends at high places.
Nathaniel, thank you for that. Steve in Southampton, is there profiteering going on? Your view, good morning.
Good morning, Nick, good to speak to you. Whether there's profiteering or not, you know, that would take a year's worth of sort of forensic accounting to work that one out. But just something interesting, that margin caps never work because it just creates or it leads to creative accounting. Because any business that's going to be driven by a margin cap and can't predict whether they're going to sort of outperform their forecasting model will just find creative ways of losing that cost to maintain the margin. They're not going to ramp down their potential revenue or stifle their continued growth. They'll just find ways to lose the cost, so the consumer will never benefit. They'll maintain this figure, but you'll just find that over an incremental period, the base cost, that gross operating profit, will just be squeezed through losses that would be so hard to pull out of, you know, big multi-billion dollar corporations, that margin caps isn't the way to do it. The way that they could probably find it out, but it takes patience, which is following a full financial cycle, they'd be able to look in. You know, we all run fairly sophisticated accounting software. They would be able to extrapolate where the revenue peaks were, whether the margins increased through that period, but the operating costs didn't.
I hear what you're saying. I've got to leave there for time reasons, Steve. Thank you. Sorry if I can't get your calls on this, but a lot of you want to have your say, but we have to move on. Before we do, I just want to read some of the notes that are coming on our conversation about girl guiding. Fumi in High Wycombe, I volunteer for girl guiding. Scouts is a mixed group. I agree with the decision to keep girl guiding for biological girls. Andrew says, I have a 13-year-old daughter. I would be concerned with her going away on a guiding trip. And lastly, Chris points out, and I'm aware of this actually, Chris, a transgender debate is forcing all WI members to sign a form to confirm they were born a female or they cannot renew their membership this month. It's causing a lot of anguish. It is a very convoluted and difficult situation. Sorry if you didn't get your calls in on the fuel prices. It is a story to which we will return. So maybe if you get your call a little earlier next time we talk about it, I'll be able to take you to air, as they say. Now, what about satisfaction in the NHS?
I think this is a really important challenge for us in the NHS, because it's not just about getting the right care in the right place at the right time. It's also about an NHS that gives them the same ease and convenience as other services that we are using.
Plus, staying with Health Matters, how London's only homeless drug and alcohol detox unit will be forced currently to close. Those stories and more follow the 9 o'clock news on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 9 o'clock, two men have been arrested in connection with an arson attack on four ambulances in North London. Four vehicles belonging to a Jewish community group were set alight in Golders Green on Monday. LBC's reporter Fraser Knight has more details.
The two men, aged 45 and 47, were taken into police custody this morning on suspicion of committing arson with intent to endanger life. But counter-terrorism police say while this appears to be a major breakthrough, their investigation isn't over because they're aware that CCTV footage seemed to suggest at least three people were involved in setting the fires.
President Trump has insisted that Iran badly wants a deal to end the four-week conflict. Reports in the US say Washington has drawn up a 15-point plan to try and end the war, but Tehran has mocked Mr. Trump's claims of peace talks, suggesting that he's negotiating with himself. It's emerged that health officials in Kent delayed reporting the first case of meningitis during the recent outbreak. It's understood it took 2 days before East Kent Hospitals Trust raised the alarm on Friday the 13th of March. Doctors have a legal duty to report cases of the infection as soon as they're suspected. The Health Secretary, Wes Streeting, has told Nick this morning, while there's no suggestion of onwards transmission, the delay is a serious matter.
We have that 24-hour standard for a reason. And I am taking this seriously. We already...
Is the head going to roll down in Margate?
Well, they had already done what we asked them to do immediately in terms of improving their compliance and rapid reporting. And I have to say, beyond what happened there, the way in which the NHS Trust, the universities and colleges and schools in Canterbury, and the young people themselves have responded has been exemplary.
Research suggests public satisfaction with NHS services has increased for the first time since the pandemic. It rose to 26% across England, Scotland and Wales last year. That's up from an all-time low of 21% in 2024. And inflation, as measured by the Consumer Prices Index, was unchanged last month at 3%. Soaring oil and gas prices caused by the war in the Middle East aren't reflected in February's official figures. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 96 points at 10,061. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.15. LBC weather, a mix of sunny spells and patchy rain for large parts of the UK through today. Some wintry showers on northern hills, a colder day, a high of 10 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Get 25% off coffee and pastries at Cafe Nero with Compare the Market. Take it away, Sergey.
I need a Nero. I'm holding up for a Nero to get a flat white. It's gotta be strong and it's gotta taste good and it's gonna be made just right. I need a Nero.
Only with the Compare the Market app, the simplest way to save.
When you take out a qualifying product, one membership a year, 25% off barista-made drinks and pastries, app only, two codes per day, exclusions and T's and C's apply.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Morning, 4 minutes after nine, Wednesday, March the 25th. Good news, satisfaction in the NHS is growing. Bad news, it's at 26% and considerably lower for younger generations. I'll be asking you about your satisfaction levels. In another story, Wes Streeting, the gentleman with whom we spoke about that story, says he wants to make it easier to dismiss racist and anti-Semitic doctors. He told me...
I have not known a level of fear and anxiety among Britain's Jews in the way that we see today, and people questioning whether Britain is a safe place to be Jewish.
And later in the hour, an LBC exclusive.
London's first and only detox centre for homeless people is closing because of government cuts. I'm LBC's Shivani Sharma at St Thomas's Hospital with the exclusive.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
As someone who's been in and around news for all my life, and I do mean all my life, because as I've told you many times, my late father ran a press agency, so I was answering the phone at about the age of 7 or 8 or 9, taking messages from newspapers for reporters. This is a good news, classic good news, bad news, good news story. The good news is that public satisfaction with the NHS is improving, and for the first time since 2019. The bad news is it's still at just 26% of you, and among Gen Zers or Gen Zers, whatever they call you, is considerably lower. Now, in the first hour, I was joined by Health Secretary Wes Streeting, and I started off by asking for his response to those figures and why it's still so historically low.
I would say that both the satisfaction figures themselves reflect the improvement that we're driving in the NHS. We've got waiting lists the lowest level in 3 years, ambulance response times the best they've been for half a decade, and even in winter we saw the four-hour waiting figures in A&E, the best performance for 4 years. But, and I'd be the first to say this, in every single one of those areas, we've still got waiting lists too high, ambulance response times too long, people waiting too long in A&E. So I would say what we're seeing in the NHS is grounds for optimism, but not cause for complacency. We are on the road to recovery, but there's a long road ahead and I've got my foot down on the accelerator.
You've got your foot, you've got the pedal to the metal, but it's interesting, there seems to be an age disparity. Mm. Older folks like me seem pretty relaxed and happy with the NHS, not so younger people. What do you put that down to, Secretary of State?
I think that there is an affinity and an affection for the NHS in this country, for people who, like me, believe this is the greatest institution our country has ever built. There are still some people alive in Britain today who remember the days where we didn't have an NHS.
I'm not that old, Mr.
No, you're, no, I'm obviously not talking about you, a mere spring chicken, Nick. But there will be people who have that in living memory in their families. For the next generation, I think this is a really important challenge for us in the NHS, because it's not just about getting the right care in the right place at the right time and younger people feeling the NHS is there for them when they need it. It's also about an NHS that gives them the same ease and convenience, choice and control as other services that we are using. And I'm not going to pretend that the NHS app will be as joyful as using Netflix, but it has more subscribers and it needs to be an easy interaction for younger people who need and expect convenient care, and that is what I aim to deliver.
So as you and your colleagues determine to drive up the satisfaction level, what are the next hurdles to clear, the next immediate hurdles to clear, would you say, Secretary of State?
So one of the things that I am conscious of is that the improvement that I am leading in the NHS at the moment and that we're seeing is driven by a number of large, improving trusts, and in some ways they are masking far too many trusts that are underperforming. So we're seeing overall performance improve, but if you live in a part of the country where your local trust is falling short of expectations, it doesn't matter if you're reading about someone else's hospital somewhere else in the country. You care about what's happening on your own doorstep. And that is why we are starting with a number of troubled trusts, five troubled trusts, sending in experienced NHS veterans to help lead turnaround with a new improvement regime. In some cases, that will mean moving on in a professional and respectful but firm way underperforming NHS leaders. We've already been doing some of that. People won't have necessarily read about it because I don't want to humiliate people. But if you're not up to the job, thanks, but we need other people in. We're also taking the best of the NHS to those troubled trusts. So we're really tackling underperformance in the NHS. Over the next year, people will be able to see and experience improvements in the NHS app. We're continuing to modernise the way that services are run. And we are continuing to invest not just in our hospitals, but in neighbourhood health, in our in general practice, in those community services and care in people's home. So what I would expect to see and what I intend to provide over the next couple of years is not just better performance, but faster improvement.
I'm sure done with due dignity, but then more heads will roll at underperforming trusts, Mr. Streeting.
Yes, that's right. And look, similarly, I will stand by some of those chief execs that I've sent in who do have high pay, but they carry a lot of clinical risk. They're responsible for life and death services.
They earn more than the PM, of course, Mr. Sutton.
Yeah, they do, and they could also be earning a lot more money working somewhere else in the private sector. And so we do need good people. And I know it's not the most popular thing to say, but I will defend those salaries if people earn them. And with those salaries and with that responsibility comes an obligation to make sure that people are performing. So we won't tolerate underperformance, and that's the message I'm sending in a speech to health leaders today.
Health Secretary was Streeting speaking with me in the first hour of the show. Now let's turn to Mark Dyan, who's head of public affairs at the Nuffield Trust. That's an independent health and social care think tank, and they've analysed the data from the British Social Attitude Survey that's given us that figure. Mark Dyan joins me now. Well, the Health Secretary is saying that it's making progress in the right direction. Can you give some historical perspective of where this is not the first year, this is not the first decade these surveys have been? What do we learn from past years, Mr. Dyan? Good morning.
Good morning. No, absolutely not. In fact, this same survey with the same question on the NHS has been running more or less since the early 1980s. And I think a couple of things to take from that which are important are satisfaction since the COVID-19 pandemic, since about 2019, has fallen to the lowest levels that we've ever seen. Even for other pretty rough periods in the NHS's past, like the 1990s, sure, that some years more people were dissatisfied than satisfied with the way the NHS ran, but we never got down to the levels we have even this year, despite it being a bit of an improvement. I think the other thing you learn from the deep history of the British Social Attitude Survey that we analysed with our colleagues at the King's Fund is that sometimes when there's been a bit of a recovery like this, it's really carried on strongly, and particularly in the noughties when the NHS had a very large amount of extra money, large amount of extra staff, waiting times were falling for nearly everything. Satisfaction improved really, really steadily for a long period of time. But at other times, it has bubbled up and down. So in the 90s, for example, it did improve a bit when John Major came in, it improved a bit when Tony Blair came in, but then it sank back again. So I'm sure that the Secretary of State will be very pleased with these results, albeit from a low base. But the question of what happens next is far from settled.
So what happened in 2019 that kind of rocked the figures in that fashion, Mark?
Well, I think it was probably the next year in 2020, but when COVID hit. But that's still a very good question, because of course the reality
is... Because we were all, every Thursday night, we were banging drums and goodness knows what else and cheering and applauding them on, and yet, boom, satisfaction seemed to have fallen off a cliff.
Well, that's right. And the slightly peculiar thing is that, in fact, NHS waiting time has been getting worse for quite a while before COVID, for at least 5 or 6 years. And there's a bit of a sense, I think, perhaps, that during COVID, people saw the strain on the NHS and they tuned into what was going on in the NHS a lot. And they realised that things were struggling. And then, of course, after the pandemic, there was a real difficulty the NHS had treating as many people as it had before. So waiting times got even worse and satisfaction fell even further. So there's something about people noticing fairly deeply rooted issues in the NHS. It's important to say, lastly, by the way, this isn't about really losing faith in the NHS. People still believe in the principle of having one. They just think it's badly run.
Lastly, it peaked, I read, in 70% in 2010. We're now almost bouncing on the bottom at 26%. As an expert in the field, Mark, what should be a realistic figure that the NHS should try to get to?
It should try to get as high as possible, really. I mean, I think, you know, you get into questions about what people's expectations are now, and that's, we'd have to detect that satisfaction rose. But I think the evidence is pretty decent from the last few years that if the NHS improves waiting times, improves access to GPs, perhaps improves things like prevention as well, to some extent the public do respond, because it has got a bit better over the last 2 years in most of those areas, and that's not unconnected from the bounce we've seen. So the NHS should simply continue trying steadily to improve its performance and improve things that matter to patients. They can probably expect to see some results from that.
Mark Dyan, thank you. You're Head of Public Affairs at the Nuffield Trust. Coming to you, Sasha. Amandeep, who's of an organisation, Doctors in Distress, says he needs to be asked about the mental health of the workforce. It's worse than ever, I am told. If you are in the NHS and you are suffering mental health issues and you're up to telling me about it, do please let me know, or some of your colleagues are. Scott in West Hampstead, I'm proud to say I have 100% satisfaction with the NHS. I have GPs who are fantastic. Hospitals here in London where I've had excellent service, whether it's tests or treatment, I could not ask for anything better. Sasha's in Northampton. What's your level of satisfaction? Does it accord with this story in the what is it, the Social Attitude Survey? Good morning.
Good morning, yes. Well, I've been waiting 8 months for a gallbladder operation, but we won't go there. I did train as a nurse, and then I worked for social services. I think that the problem is within social services. I do feel there is not enough recruitment for carers. There is nothing more basic than being put on a toilet, having medication, being washed and dressed in the morning. And if that fails, you end up in hospital because you haven't had your tablets, you become dirty, you get infections. I just think the social care is always the poor relation when people talk about NHS and social, you know. When the government were trying to, you know, get who we're going to vote for, nobody mentioned social care. They always mention the NHS. But it's like there's never enough lanes on the M25. Go to the basics. If you can't get on a toilet, you will end up in hospital, and that is social care.
And lastly then, what would you say to the Health Secretary when you listen to that interview?
I do think there are good pockets, but I do think it is whoever runs it. They need to go back to basics. When you become a manager, you lose touch of what's going on in reality. Speak to some nurses who've been doing the job for 30, 40 years. They will tell you the truth. You need to know what's really going on. When managers get round taken to the hospital and someone important comes, they're taken to the well-painted wards, the well-run bits. Go to the bits that are not being run properly.
Sasha, thank you. I know from an interview that I conducted with Wes Streeting just before last Christmas, He makes a point on Christmas Day, wherever he finds himself, that he deliberately goes to a hospital and doesn't give them any warning because he wants to see how they're faring. Now, I'm not saying that other visits, perhaps when the Prime Minister goes and you see Mr. Streeting and the Prime Minister and they have their sleeves rolled up as you have to when you're in wards, has that been carefully choreographed? I'm sure it has. But I do think in Mr. Streeting's defence, I have to say that I know for a fact that he sometimes makes almost like mystery shopper visits. Yeah, that's the word, mystery shopper visits, as it were. Sasha, thank you. Your level of satisfaction. We know what the British Social Attitude Survey says. But what say you? We'll have more on that after the 9:16 LBC News headlines from Dominic Ellis.
Two men have been arrested in connection with the arson attack on four ambulances in North London on Monday. Iran has suggested President Trump's negotiating with himself after he insisted Tehran badly wants a deal to end the war. And the health secretary has told Nick that he's taking reports the NHS delayed raising the alarm about the first meningitis case in Kent very seriously. LBC weather, a mix of sunny spells and patchy rain for large parts of the UK, wintry showers on northern hills, a high of 10 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. The delays do continue with the A40 being closed in both directions. It's closed between the Northern Roundabout and the Marylebone Flyover for the ongoing bridge works. There are delays both ways, but also on the M4 and the A4 as well, as traffic diverts. Also problems in Englefield Green. The A30 London Road's very busy westbound, and that's because of an accident. Also problems in Woodford Green. Snakes Lane East is partially blocked westbound because of an ongoing investigation, and that's causing delays back to the Chigwell Road. On the trains, London North Western aren't running between Watford Junction and St Albans Abbey. A train has broken down. But better news for Chiltern Railways, the delays at Marylebone have cleared.
LBC.
The weather's warmer, the days are longer, and the savings are even better in the Hillary's Spring Sale. Right now, there's up to 40% off hundreds of made-to-measure styles. Plus, get an extra 10% off everything in our flash event, including our total blackout blinds for complete darkness and a good night's sleep. And don't forget, with Hillary's, measuring and fitting is always included. So get window wise and book your free in-home appointment today at hillarys.co.uk. But hurry, an extra 10% off everything ends the 13th of April. Conditions apply.
Call Nick Ferrari now, 0345 6060 973, LBC.
Pain in my hip. I keep feeling dizzy. I'm getting migraines more often.
There's another way to contact your GP practice, by simply sending your symptoms and requests through their website or the NHS app. We're delivering an NHS fit for the future. Tap it, type it, and we'll take care of it.
Julia, how do you spell vertebrae?
Oh, just type pain in the neck.
At AJ Bell, we believe investing is for everyone. And when we say everyone, we mean your dad, Dan, Danielle, Dean, Dave, Dell, Dell's delivery driver Denise, Denise's dentist Dinesh, and Devon's strongest man, Donathan. Donathan? Donathan, that can't be right. Donathan? Well, whatever your name is, if you're a real person, investing is for you too. AJ Bell, feel good investing. The value of your investments can go up or down.
This Wednesday, the £12 million Lotto jackpot must be won.
Must be won?
Yes. Lotto from the National Lottery. It could be you. Estimated jackpot. Rules apply. 18 plus.
A Thameslink train is a place where family moments become more peaceful. Where you can spread out and a game of I Spy gets a scenic upgrade with snacks, stories and the occasional sheep for a bonus point. Less stress, more yes with kids tickets for £2 at thameslinkrailway.com. Terms apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
The British Social Attitude Survey, 26% approval rating with the NHS. The good news is it's on the way up. The bad news is it's very low. 70% was the highest, by the way, ever. 2010. COVID having a massive impact, as we've learned. Spike's in Tenby. What's your level of satisfaction and why, Spike? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. First-time caller to you.
Thank you.
My satisfaction, having just moved to Wales 2 years ago after retirement of 44 years in uniform for the King and Queen,
oh, right.
35 years in the Royal Air Force, and then 9 years in the Tower of London.
Right.
And came to the Wales, obviously not realising, but through ignorance, I presume, about the devolution effect of NHS Wales not speaking to NHS England.
And we hear it's pretty grim down in Wales, NHS provision. What's the reality as you see it, Spike?
So I got diagnosed with needing a total knee replacement in January this year. Got the letter through saying, yes, fully agree. You're priority four because you're a veteran. I mean, I don't know who's three and two, but tell you what, I'm priority four. Right. And you will be looked at in December 2027. So that's all of this summer and all of next summer, walking with a stick after all those years service on a disability pension, thinking surely. And if you try and seek health in the in England, which there's a fabulous surgeon in Oswestry who operates on veterans, you need to get S2 funding from NHS Wales, and they won't let you go across to England because they say they've got capacity, even though the waiting list is considerably long. You need to get in the queue with everybody else. So certainly, as a you know, an Englishman living here in Wales, and I know I chose to come in here, but it's a fabulous place to live in Pembrokeshire.
Let me ask you this. Surely the fact that you have to walk with a stick for effectively two more years, that's going to put pressure on other parts of your body because they're going to have to operate in a way which they're not really meant to do.
Exactly right. Yeah, I left the military with a fused ankle, which I got a war pension for, so it's the same leg, and that's the result now why the knee's gone. And I now can't work, so I'm only 64, so I can still I don't get a state pension yet, so I'm unable to work anywhere. I had a little part time job, had to pack that in. So you obviously you can't claim any benefits or anything. So you want to go out and partake in contributing to the tax system, which you can't, and it's very frustrating.
Spike, have you been able to glean how long the wait would be if you'd stayed in England?
It's a year. Yep,
I know. It's almost double down in Wales.
It certainly is, yeah.
And lastly, when you get in restaurants or pubs or cafes or whatever, and you tell other Welsh people, do they say, yes, Spike, sorry, mate, that's the way it is here, or are they surprised by it?
It certainly is. And the most ironic thing is that the consultant I saw, he said, I could see you in 4 weeks' time as a private patient, and I can operate on you in 4 weeks' time. So if you've got £16,995, you can have your knee replaced.
Is that how, how much a knee is? 17 grand?
£16,995 is the standard rate for...
How did you do your knee? Was it in service that you did your knee in?
Yeah, my ankle was, and then obviously I had a knock-on effect, which got fused by a fabulous surgeon while I was serving in the tower, because you could reach out very easily to surgeons there. But but there is light at the end of the tunnel. I am going to go private, because I cannot wait 2 years. There's a fabulous hospital in Bristol that's going to see me, and they're doing 10% discount for veterans. And then I've reached out to a fabulous military charity called St. Agnes on Harley Street, and they've said, as a veteran, we're going to contribute 50%. So there are charities out there that if you seek them out.
That's shameful. How many years service did you do, Spike?
44 years in uniform. So I joined at 17 and I left the tower 2 years ago at age 63. So
so we're happy to put you in harm's way, but we can't put your knee right or your leg right when you need it.
Exactly. You know, I've never been employed since I was 17. And it's just the frustration of it to think, and then obviously here, West Street and coming on. Oh, ironically, I had him as a guest in the tower in our bar, which we will remember. But, and you're hearing there saying that, people satisfied. Well, not for people that come and live here in Wales.
That charity again?
St. Agnes, a fabulous charity based in Edward VII Hospital in Harley Street.
I know Edward VII. I've been taking a member of my family there recently. Hey, good luck, Spike. Let us know when you get... When is it? When is it scheduled for, Sport?
April the 13th.
Give us a call on April the 20th. Give you a week to get better. How about that?
Fantastic. Speak to you then.
Deal. Thank you for your call. Thank you for your service. Thank you to St. Agnes. What a great charity. What a scandal, that man. 40-plus years of his life for Queen and King and country. And in Wales, where, I'm going to say this, Labour run the NHS, and they have for years, I have to say it. Not very good, is it? 2 years to put that man's leg right? I don't know. All right, might come back to that. We go to other health matters. And a whistleblower has told LBC the closure of London's only dedicated detox unit for homeless drug and alcohol addicts will result in deaths. Next week, the Addiction Clinical Care Suite, the Addiction Clinical Care Suite at St. Thomas's Hospital, which has treated over 1,000 patients for alcohol and opioid dependencies, will shut as a result of central government funding cuts. Here with all the details of the exclusive report, LBC's Shivani Sharma, outside the relevant hospital. Shivani, good morning.
Nick, good morning. It was 2021 when this hospital, St. Thomas's, opened the capital's first ever detox centre for homeless people to help with alcohol and opioid addictions. And since then, as you say, it's helped treat 1,000 vulnerable individuals and keep many of them off the streets. And yet, LBC has been told by a whistleblower whose voice we've changed to protect their identity that this centre, the Addiction Clinical Care Suite, will be shutting its doors next week because of central government funding cuts, an action which she says will have devastating consequences.
It's clearly a false economy. They just haven't thought this through at all. All that's going to happen is we're going to see more and more addicts present at A&E departments as a last resort when they are seriously, seriously ill, piling more pressure on staff. Lives are going to be lost. I have no doubt about that whatsoever.
In an internal memo seen by LBC, we've learnt that senior management at Guy's and St. Thomas's NHS Foundation Trust tried to look for several alternative ways to keep the service open, but that ultimately it's not been possible in a context where budgets for specialised drug and alcohol grants have been frozen this year. Now, the homelessness campaigner and founder of The Big Issue, Lord Bird, has told us that this closure risks rubbishing the government's plans to halve rough sleeping by 2029.
These people will, they'll end up in prisons, they'll end up in, they'll end up back in the streets, they'll end up being more chaotic, they'll end up filling up the A&E. What they're really doing is passing the responsibility back to police officers, social workers, members of the public. So really what we're doing is we're pushing the problems back onto the streets.
Now, whilst the service was commissioned by the City of London Corporation, its funding is made up of a series of grants from the Ministry of Housing, Communities and Local Government and the Health Department. And so it's something you put to the Health Secretary, Wes Streeting, a little earlier this morning.
You brought this to my attention this morning. I am going to go away and look at this. I look at homeless people on our streets. I look at people with drug and alcohol addiction. And it's no exaggeration to say, there but for the grace of God go I. Like, there are so many people in this country who are one or two missed paydays away from being homeless. I've seen drug and alcohol addiction in my own family, particularly one of my grandparents, my granddad, who was in and out of prison throughout my childhood, my mum's childhood. He had suffered terrible abuse as a child and a terrible relationship with alcohol throughout his life. So I've seen the worst of some of this. We can't write these people off. We can't just say it's all their fault. Quite the opposite. And we judge a society by how it treats its most vulnerable. So I've got to go and understand what's happened here. I'm not going to sit here as judge, jury and executioner on the decision. But it's my responsibility as Health Secretary to make sure we're providing the right care in the right place at the right time to people. So I'm going to go away and do that.
Now, Nick, the Health Department has told us that it's investing £3.4 billion over the next 3 years in drug and alcohol prevention. Although whether that will be of any solace to the people who've been benefiting from this particular service here in central London is an entirely different matter.
LBC Shivani Sharma reporting. Let's get a call in on this. Jim's in Beckenham. How do you know this clinic, Jim? Good morning.
Hello, Nick. Thanks for highlighting this issue. Well, I've been going in as a volunteer ever since it opened in 2021. And I'm a former social worker in the field of addiction and recovery. And also I'm in recovery.
Right.
My 50th year this year.
Well done. How well is the clinic run? What does it provide for? What's team spirit like there, Jim?
Well, team spirit, actually, subdued, and I think they've known for some months. Yeah, not very good, because no one can really understand. It seems to be a funding issue, that they're pulling the funding. However, it's an amazing... There's 11 of these medical detoxes run by the NHS in the UK. They serve people with... They serve addicts, alcoholics with complex needs. And like somebody goes in there for addiction to alcohol or other drugs, and they might have pancreatitis or liver disease. Well, you can imagine after their detox is sorted out, they go on the ninth floor
into a ward where their liver can be had, you know, where they can have treatment for their other physical ailments.
How many beds are in this
unit? It's a real specialist, you know, unit.
How many beds are in the unit, would you say, Jim?
11 beds at any one time. And although it was opened initially for the homeless addicts, you get other people. The majority of people aren't all homeless, you know, but it's catered for the...
I mean, lastly, this isn't, you know, your problem. This is a problem for West Street and the NHS. Where will these folk go?
Well, where they go, Nick, it'll be random. Some of them will find their way to A&E, random beds. It's kind of a retrogressive move, actually. It's a premier unit, 11 in the country, and now it's going to close. It's closing Friday, and people will just... Well, there's other detoxes, but it will travel. It will cost the NHS more in the long run, you know.
50 years of sobriety. Well done, Jim. Well done for the work you've put into that clinic. Yes, it closes on Friday, although the Health Secretary has promised he will look at it, but he's going to change it all Friday, I wouldn't imagine. Jim, thank you. We'll have more on that. Also, coming up after the news, how racist and anti-Semitic doctors will be dismissed. Yes, it's another health story we'll be looking at. It's 9:32. Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrara, and LBC News Time, then with Dominic Ellis.
Two men have been arrested in connection with an arson attack on ambulances in North London. Four vehicles belonging to a Jewish community group were set alight in Golders Green on Monday. Iran has confirmed it's received a 15-point plan from the United States over reaching a ceasefire. Earlier, Tehran disputed President Trump's claim that America has won the war, saying that the president is negotiating with himself. And the health secretary has told Nick that he's taking the delay by an NHS trust in Kent to report the first case of meningitis very seriously. Doctors have a legal duty to report cases of the infection as soon as they're suspected. LBC weather, a mix of sunny spells and patchy rain for large parts of the UK. Some wintry showers on northern hills, a high of 10 degrees.
This is LBC.
Calling all young creatives. It's time to get prepped for the content production industry. And where better than Global Academy? Here's Daisy, a technical content production student in year 12.
We've already learned how to create content and work with employers in the media industry. I love working in the studio, making my own podcast, and can't wait to start my 45-day work placement next term.
Global Academy. Apply now and join us in years 10 or 12. GlobalAcademy.com.
Jay here knows that Zoopla can provide valuations for any home in the UK, so we can see what that new couple across the road might have paid.
Ooh la la.
Have a nose at what the curtain twitchers next door could sell for. And even see what his own place is worth.
Cool, look at that.
Plus, Zoopla lets you find and compare local estate agents if you do decide to sell up. Think of all those new neighbours you'll be able to snoop on, Jay. If you want to know, just ask Zoopla.
Do you know your state pension age? No. Maybe you're not sure, or you don't know how to check. It's so quick and easy to check online. All you need is your date of birth. Knowing your state pension age helps you think about your future. So check yours today. Search state pension age on gov.uk and simply enter your date of birth. State pension age. It's good to know.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Let's go to other health matters. Let's be honest, outside of the health and well-being of our children, it's probably one of our prime concerns, isn't it? And we will come back to that satisfaction. But one other aspect that I raised with Wes Streeting a couple of hours ago in the first hour of the show is this plan for it to make it easier to dismiss racist or anti-Semitic doctors. Measures are being brought in by Wes Streeting, who spoke of too many recent examples of doctors using racist and anti-Semitic language. And I asked him exactly how that crackdown might work.
I have seen and experienced high-profile cases of NHS staff engaging in racism unapologetically, online, visibly. I've been in this very frustrating situation where if I call people out individually and challenge them, I might prejudice their cases with the regulator. But then worse still, these cases go in front of a regulator and they get off. And what this does, and it's not just about anti-Semitism, this applies to racism more generally, but we've had a particular problem, visible problem online with anti-Semitism. I've got Jewish people in my own community who I represent as a local MP, who've told me when they go into my local hospitals, they don't want to tick kosher on the dietary requirements. They don't want to tell people that they're Jewish because they're frightened that they might get treated differently by our National Health Service at a time of great vulnerability. And not only is that just appalling, it is also unsafe. There are often risk factors. If I take the BRCA gene, for example, which is a particular risk factor for Jewish communities, if someone is of Jewish ethnicity and background, we need to know from a patient safety point of view. If people, but more fundamentally, Nick, we've got a real problem here. I mean, there's a real rise in racism in our country generally, and we've got to take this seriously. All of us, every decent-minded person, can play a part in challenging that situation. I've got to tell you though, I have not known a level of fear and anxiety among Britain's Jews in the way that we see today. And people questioning whether Britain is a safe place to be Jewish. And I think that should shock and shame us. And even this week, as I looked upon the sight of four burned out ambulances, the broken glass on the synagogue next door, there are still people in our country who think we're spending too much time talking about anti-Semitism, what's all the fuss, and worse still, beneath those, what they might think are innocuous questions, is a really heavy dose of anti-Semitic racism. And we cannot stand for this. And that's why every decent person in this country needs to speak up. And why we as a government, we've got to take action. We are investing in security. We are taking action to discipline and get racists out of the NHS. We're investing in education, in schools. But the answer can't just be higher walls, thicker doors, more CCTV and more money spent at the problem. This is a hateful ideology. It needs to be beaten in the battle of ideas. We've got to call this out for what it is and go after it and build a common front in this country against racism of all types.
Higher walls, thicker doors. Do you realise now in this country, it wasn't that long ago, that people were murdered in a synagogue? I'll tread carefully because we've just had arrests, but I can say that four ambulances were destroyed, were set alight and torched just this week. You have Jewish people who are harassed in the street. Jewish men who wear, is it called a kolpik? Don't quote me, those big fur hats. I think it's called a kolpik. They have them pushed off their head as like for sport. Jewish people get... When Jewish children go to school, there are guards at the school gate. In most instances, they're behind high wire. Jewish care homes as well. Remind anybody of anything? Yeah, you know what I'm alluding to. Strong words from Wes Streeting. We also hear strong... And he's not really in a position to do that much across the whole of the government. He's clearly doing as much as he can in the health service, and the doctors who are anti-Semitic or racist are going to be booted out, quite rightly. The idea you're admitted to hospital and you don't want to tick the box for kosher food, just as you should be able to tick the box, by the way, for halal food or whatever food you want to tick, that is outrageous. Gabe's in Boreham Wood. Gabe, you're on the radio. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Nick. How are you?
I'm all right. How are you?
Yeah, frustrated. I think as a Northwest London Jew, I'm actually a South London Jewish lad whose father is not Jewish, so I come from a mixed background.
Okay. So you are Jewish yourself? You identify as Jewish now, do you?
I do indeed, yeah. Okay. But I understand, you know, I've got a different heritage, if you will, and mm-hmm. I think the uprising of, like, anti-Semitic comments, et cetera, is terrifying. So I look after a Jewish football club.
Oh, yeah.
And in the last 3 weeks, every single week, we've had an incident. So we've had either shut your mouth, you effing Jews, or we've had go back to the gas chambers, or we've had every single week to children. And so one of the parents stepped forward and said, we're really embarrassed of our children, we're really sorry of the opposition. They see it all on social media. They see it all as acceptable. And I've just sort of, the bit... I actually really like Wes Streeting. Mm-hmm. I think he's a genuinely straight-up chap. I think
he's very committed to his job. I'll give you that without a shadow.
100%. And I think the reality for me is at the moment, there's too much talk in general and there's not enough to. And solar ambulances, I think we'll actually end up stealing the Jewish community. We'll end up becoming almost stronger because of it and we'll come together. But until the real world starts to see... that these comments aren't acceptable, and that 30, 40 years ago, comments of different types weren't acceptable, and now we've moved on from that. I think we just have to, like, where's the empathy gone? Whereas you can be who you want to be and I can be who I want to be, and that's okay to be different. Where's that gone in our communities?
What needs to back up politicians' words, Gabe?
Action.
Describe what that action would look like.
So I think there has to be some sort of punishment attached to incidents like this. I think there has to be some sort of, rather than either swept under the carpet or, you know, sort of, oh, but, you know, they're young and they need to educate and whatever else, there needs to be action. And where's this talking about anti-Semitism or racism? I think racism in the greater sense, if I was in the NHS and I was a doctor and I was racist towards a Sikh or a Muslim or a Christian or a Seventh-day Adventist colleague, I would expect to be reprimanded for that. I would expect to be punished for that. It's irrelevant whether it's on some level, whether I'm Jewish. It just so happens that right now we've got the biggest target on our backs. And people aren't paying attention to that. And Manchester should have been the biggest warning sign.
Yes.
And Golders Green is just another step down a pathway. And until action's taken, people will continue to think that's acceptable.
What's the age of the players you work with in the football team?
Well, I work from the youth section, so under 18 downwards. And my chairman and vice chairman are absolutely adamant that we'll look at all incidents like this. But this is across the board. This particular team are an under 15 group who are one of the nicest, most, like, committed groups of young men I've ever coached.
Right.
And they've had it 3 weeks on the trot. And I think, you know,
when the referee hears language such as "you effing Jew" or does other, does the player get sent? What happens to the player who says that?
More often than not, it's said as a flyby comment. So people do it as they run past a player or whatever else. So the referee, more often than not, has the ability to step back and say, "I didn't hear it, I didn't see it." As it turns out, this group of boys decided to walk off the pitch 2-0 up with 10 minutes to go, and actually kudos to them because they took a stand.
Yes.
And that's happened across the board. Look at where it's happened for racism towards black players in Spain, for example. And
wasn't the Newcastle Sunderland game held up as well, or something, on the weekend?
Yeah, this season, yeah. Right. Vinny Jr. has had huge instances of it at Real Madrid.
Right.
And so I think until sanctions are taken, you know, towards the understanding that anti-Semitism, "you effing Jew," or "go back to the gas chambers," has as deeply meaningful pain, if you will, to young Jewish footballers or young Jewish individuals, you know what? It just becomes acceptable. It just becomes another norm that that's okay to speak to somebody like that.
So fascinating from the work you do. Good luck with the lads and possibly the girls that you coach as well, and the whole setup there. I hope the teams enjoy success on the pitch that they clearly deserve, the amount of work they're putting in. And that is the reality, isn't it? My goodness. Well, we're talking about that as part of the NHS. Thanks again, Gabe. We're talking about that as part of the NHS, these racist and anti-Semitic doctors that we dismissed. More broadly, the British Social Attitudes Survey or poll says there's a 26% satisfaction rating. Jill's in Guildford. Would you give it 26% or higher? Good morning.
Much lower.
Tell me why, Jill.
Because my husband, who has early dementia, has been waiting over 6 months now after having had a referral to the memory clinic.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew there would be a wait. I'm used to waiting.
Mm.
But when we got to sort of the 5-month mark, I thought, I'm going to have to chase this up. So I got in touch with them and was told, yes, they did have my referral, but it had been rejected. And I said, well, nobody's told my GP or me this. So we've had to go right back to the beginning again.
Right.
Back to the GP, more the same blood test repeated, and we're starting from square one. And it just annoys me when they say waiting lists are coming down. 6 months for somebody who we suspect has, well, we're pretty sure has dementia or the beginnings of.
What will the memory clinic provide?
Well, I don't know.
Right.
They'll give you a diagnosis because we haven't actually got an official diagnosis. So when the GP and myself and my family know what the problem is.
But once you have a diagnosis, what will that mean? What can be provided? Does that mean you can access a level of care that you can't currently?
It means I can access help and support.
I see. Okay. Yes. So that's why it's important to get this done. Do you have any sense of how much longer it's going to take, Jill?
Not a clue.
How is your husband through all of this? Is he aware of what's going on?
Yes, he is. And it's upsetting.
Of course
it is. And worrying. And it isn't helping the situation because I have worked myself as a carer for people with dementia.
Yes.
And I know full well that the sooner it is diagnosed, the more chance there is of being, there is medication out there which won't stop it.
No, but it will delay it.
It will delay it and slow it down.
How old did you say your husband was, Jill?
He's 76.
76. All right. Good luck. I can understand. I can hear the frustration in your voice, Jill.
Yeah, well, I just sit and wait and hope. I mean, I have actually contacted lots of people. I spent my days chasing things. And I was put in touch with, I think it's called PALS, which is the hospital patient liaison group. And I had an email saying, yes, they had my email, but if I hadn't heard anything, they should be in contact with me. If I haven't heard anything within 10 days to contact then again, which I've tried to do, but it just keeps cutting off and you put on hold.
Jill, I'm glad you got through. Best wishes to your husband. I hope you get a breakthrough, as it were. We'll continue this conversation after the 9:47 LBC News headlines. Dominic Ellis.
Two men have been arrested in connection with an arson attack on four ambulances in North London on Monday. Iran has confirmed it's received a 15-point plan from the United States over reaching a potential ceasefire, and the health secretary has told Nick that he's taking the delay by an NHS trust in Kent to report the first case of meningitis very seriously. LBC weather, a mix of sunny spells and patchy rain for large parts of the UK. Wintry showers on northern hills, a high of 10 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. The A12's very busy northbound at the North Circular Road junction, and that's where a van's broken down, so one lane is closed. Also, delays in Englefield Green. The A30 London Road is partially blocked westbound following an accident. The A40 remains closed in both directions between the Marylebone Flyover and the Northern Roundabout at the West Crossroad for the ongoing bridge work. So that's causing delays on the approach, but also on the surrounding routes, especially the A4 and the M4. On the trains, London Northwestern services remain suspended between Watford Junction and St Albans Abbey. That's because a train's broken down and only one Woolwich ferry is running throughout today. It's because of the ongoing maintenance works.
Coming up at 10 on LBC, James O'Brien.
Shall we take a step back this morning and reflect on how we have been affected by events in the Middle East, and is being an influencer a viable career ambition?
James O'Brien at 10. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
A little something for spring is coming your way from Tesco Mobile. A £20 gift card. It's yours with selected club card price offers, like our 60GB SIM for just £13 a month, saving you £48. So switch today to enjoy a little extra this spring. It pays to be connected. Search Tesco Mobile. Every little helps. End 17th of May. Club card, 4G phone and 24-month credit agreement required. Savings calculated on contract duration. Terms at tescomobile.com/terms.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345-6060-973. LBC.
Hi, I'm looking for a pair of jeans.
Right. Low slung, slouchy, wide leg, bower leg, curved leg, flared, straight or skinny?
Blue?
Fashion. It's hard to keep on top of. Other things, like the upcoming changes to renting, are a bit easier. If you are a landlord and you have existing tenants, you must send them a copy of the government's information sheet by the 31st of May, or risk a fine. Find out more at gov.uk/renting-is-changing.
Train to Cambridge and then all aboard the paddleboards. A little bit different, should be fun. Or wobbly, or wet.
The wetsuit's a good look on you, Steve.
Actually, it feels very relaxed.
George is up the river cam without a paddle.
Train home, that was such a laugh. I think I might even have a new hobby. Download the Thames Link Railway app to book tickets and save a third off group travel on off-peak journeys. Thames Link Railway, where every stop is a story.
Right, who's all in for Cancer Research UK's Race for Life? Sunday Leaguers, dog lovers, bait clubbers, banker dancers, baby ravers, potters. Whether you walk it, jog it, or run it, go all in against cancer. all in to help fund life-saving research.
Sign up now and save 50% off entry to your local 3K, 5K, 10K or Pretty Muddy event. Search Race for Life. Discount ends April 19th, 2026. T's and C's apply.
So, what's on your to-do list today? Why don't you check if you're eligible for pension credit? It tops up your pension income and also opens up help with heating bills, council tax, and more. Search pension credit on gov.uk or call 0800 99 1234. There's nothing to lose. Check today. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
Let's talk about anti-Semitism. Very, very strong words from Wes Streeting. Now, he can only, obviously, currently control the health sector. And he's ensuring that legislation is brought in that he'll allow, when I say him, not personally, but racist or anti-Semitic doctors, to lose their jobs. Which he said that there have been too many cases where they haven't and they should. But in other cases, when you hear the words from people such as the Prime Minister, an attack on a Jewish person will not be accepted in this country. But there's no backing up. It's just words without action. Hayley's in Lancaster. Hayley, you're on the radio. What do you want to tell me on this? Good morning.
Hi, Nick.
Hello.
Thanks for taking my call.
Hayley, we're going to have to move you because I'm struggling and I think you've dropped off. Can we try and get Hayley in a better place while I talk with Sandra in Hampstead? Sandra, you're on the radio. Hello, let's try again with you. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call, Nick. I wanted to say on the question of anti-Semitism, do your listeners not realise that the Jews are the canaries in the coal mine?
Mm-hmm. Explain what I know what you mean. Explain what you mean by that to others, if you would.
Well, I would like the easiest way of explaining that was if you read a poem by Pastor Niemöller, who was a Lutheran pastor in Germany. Yep. He wrote, if I can read the whole thing, is it too long for me to read?
Can you read? It's the first four of punchy five or six lines are the ones I think we need to hear, Sandra, if you would.
Okay. It said, basically, first they came for the communists, and I did not speak out because I was not a communist, etc. Then they came for the trade unionists, and I did not speak out because I was not a trade unionist. And then they came for the Jews, and I did not speak out because I was not a Jew. And then they came for me, and there was no one left to speak out for me.
I assume you are Jewish yourself.
I am indeed, yes.
How safe do you feel in London or in the United Kingdom? Whichever way you want to answer that.
I haven't reached the point yet where I feel totally unsafe, I must admit, but I'm beginning to feel more and more. I'm of a generation that had the most wonderful education here, health service, social life, without any fear. And it's beginning to change, and my children and grandchildren are seeing the change. I think certainly my children are becoming much more aware of being much more careful. You know?
What was it like in the good old days when you didn't have these, can I use the word fears, or can I say pressures at least anyway? What was it like then? Were you much easier times here?
Much easier. I mean, we were at a school that was totally, mixed. Jewish children, Christian children, Asian immigrant, it was no problem. We walked in the streets, we had absolutely no problem, there was no attacks. But it's beginning to change, and I'm afraid the government, as you said, Wes Streeting is brilliant, doing a great job, and their action has been very proactive, but it's words.
Why is that, lastly, Sandra? The Prime Minister says what he has to say, but it doesn't seem to be backed up. The Mayor of London says what he has to say, but it doesn't seem to be backed up. The police even say, why is there no backup to all of this?
I don't know. I'm not a politician. Unfortunately, we don't get a chance to speak directly to the politicians. I wonder where the Mayor of London was when these attacks in Golders Green were going on. I mean, Keir Starmer showed his face where Streeting went along. Not a word from the mayor.
Well, no, not a word is not fair, because he did put out a statement saying that it is wholly unacceptable. To my knowledge, he did not visit the site. I will say to my knowledge, and if he did, I want to stand corrected, but it's not fair to say he said that he did say something, but again, as unlike the health secretary who went up there, to my knowledge, the mayor has yet to visit the site. I don't know. Sandra, thank you. I think we've got Hayley in Lancaster back on a better line. Hayley, you're on the radio. Hello.
Hi, sorry about that.
Oh, wow. You're like a different person.
I've got terrible reception in my house.
Oh, right.
Apologies. I'm standing outside.
So hang on. The phone works outside your house, but not inside your house.
There you have it.
All right. Well, at least it's a nice day, hopefully, in Lancaster.
Yeah, yeah, we're not sleeting again, so that's good. I'm from London originally.
Yep.
I live up in Lancaster. Yep. I'm Jewish.
Right.
And I'm absolutely livid.
Is there much of a Jewish community in Lancaster?
No. There's a few of us.
Right. Okay.
There's a few of us. It's not. It's only a smattering.
Okay.
But we're close, you know, and we get together. It's lovely.
Yep.
I'm just furious.
Tell me what's made you so angry, Hayley.
It is getting the atmosphere in the UK right now. As a Jewish person, is becoming intolerable.
Yeah.
Right. It is every time, for instance, if you use social media, you can guarantee that every time you go online, if there is an article about Israel, about whatever's going on in Gaza, about whatever's going on for the Jewish community in the UK, it will be overwhelmed with racist and fascist comments. Mm. It is disgusting. And I am telling you, the problem isn't just on the right. It is absolutely a problem with the left. It is horrendous. There is conspiracies. There is, like, so say, for instance, just with the ambulance, the ambulance attacks this week in Golders Green. You know what I saw online? Things like, oh, well, it was an inside job and this was for insurance. And why are we always talking about the Jewish community? And who cares? And why does the Jewish community have its own ambulance service? We don't. It's the Jewish version of St. John's Ambulance. It's for everybody.
I know it is.
It is disgusting. I am sick of it, and I've had enough.
Let me ask you this, a similar point, and I will single out again, Wes Streeting has actually brought in a policy, so if you're anti-Semitic or you're racist in the NHS, you're likely to lose your job, as should be the case. But the other politicians, for me, Hayley, and you're speaking as a Jewish woman who's obviously understandably troubled by this, it's just words from everyone else, it would appear.
It's nothing but words. It's nothing but words, because the actual actions that we see are things like, for instance, Palestine Action, who have deliberately targeted Jewish businesses, things that they see as being in any way connected to Israel or Israeli funding, because they have decided that Israel is a demon and a country that shouldn't exist. They have deliberately targeted it, and when they do things like go and be tried in court, they are not found guilty.
Well, that of course, that is what the court process is. Of course, we must celebrate that we have courts that work properly.
Yes, we should. Absolutely.
Yes.
But when you're not recognising the fact that there is 100% a singling out of a particular people simply for who they are, why is that not being recognised as part of the process?
Well, you're right, it is, because they're in their synagogues and they get murdered. They go to a bakery in North London and that gets vandalised. They go to their cemeteries and their gravestones get vandalised, and there's a common thread between it all. Hayley, I'll let you bizarrely go back inside the house, having made the call from outside the house, and you had the last word. Hayley, thank you. Apologies to Eleanor, to Hannah, to Vicky and others. We're done for another day. The talking, of course, continues with James O'Brien. If you missed today's show, listen back on the free Global Player app or the LBC app, where you can stay up to date with all the latest news, videos and opinions. Download the official LBC app for free from your app store now. That's it. James O'Brien, the other side of the news. I'm back tomorrow morning from 7. Meantime, stay safe.
Thank you, Nick. I can never remember what it is that the different sides of the brain do. You know, the left side and the right side. One side is for one thing and the other side is for something quite different. But I find myself approaching events in the Middle East this morning in a sort of strangely split fashion, a sort of dichotomy, if you prefer. Because on the one hand, I'm interested in the micro, in the personal, which is, what signs are you already seeing? I've got to get a new mortgage in January and I am worried about what the market is going to look like then. A friend of mine currently looking for a new mortgage now because the old one is coming to an end, and their own advisor said, well, the world is on fire. These aren't words you want to hear from a financial advisor. And then, of course, there's the meta, the big picture. What have we learned?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, two men have been arrested in connection with an arson attack on ambulances belonging to a Jewish community charity. Four vehicles were set alight in Golders Green in northwest London in the early hours of Monday morning. LBC's reporter Fraser Knight says Scotland Yard is still following lines of inquiry.
Counter-terrorism police who took charge of the investigation say they are aware that video footage seems to show at least three people were involved in setting the fires. And so while the arrests of two people they say looks to be a major breakthrough, their investigation is still ongoing.
Iran has confirmed it's received a 15-point plan from the United States over reaching a potential ceasefire. Earlier, Tehran disputed Donald Trump's claim of diplomatic progress, saying the president is negotiating with himself. Figures show that inflation in the UK remained at 3% last month. It's in line with predictions, but doesn't take into account rises in petrol prices caused by the war in Iran. It's emerged health officials in Kent delayed reporting the first case of meningitis during the recent outbreak. It took 2 days before the alarm was raised on Friday the 13th of March. Doctors have a legal duty to report cases of infection as soon as they're suspected. Health Secretary Wes Streeting's told LBC this morning. While he's taking the matter seriously, he's satisfied with the response.
I have to say, beyond what happened there, the way in which the NHS Trust, the universities and colleges and schools in Canterbury and the young people themselves have responded has been exemplary. Right. We've seen confirmed cases and suspected cases beginning to fall. That's encouraging. I'm not complacent. We're not out of the woods yet. But we've responded rapidly and I think we've contained this outbreak in the way that we needed to.
East Kent Hospital's University Foundation Trust has acknowledged it missed an opportunity to alert officials sooner. And the first female Archbishop of Canterbury, Dame Sarah Mullally, will be enthroned in a formal ceremony later. It'll mark the symbolic start to her position as head of the Church of England following her appointment in October. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 93 at 10,057. The pound buys $1.33 and €1.15. LBC weather, a mix of sunny spells and patchy rain for large parts of the UK. Some wintry showers on northern hills, a high of 10 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Hey Sainsbury's, I'm cooking for everyone this Easter, but I don't want to break the bank. Got any tasty offers?
Well, with Nectar, there's half price on selected sides of salmon. And selected beef joints and whole legs of lamb are better than half price.
Ooh, they'll be as happy as my wallet.
Sainsbury's, good food for all of us. 18 plus, Nectar required, excludes locals, ends 7th of April, subject to availability. T's and C's apply.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It's 3 minutes after ten, and before we get stuck into the conversation about world affairs, I did find myself yesterday thinking about the water companies in the context of the story about vets, and that might sound a little odd, but I just want to get this in front of you before I forget or before it slips off my personal radar. And the reason why they've had to cap prescription charges for vets is the same reason why we're so angry with water companies. It's what happens when private capital, private venture, venture capitalists move into previously quite well-regulated and well-run areas and prioritise taking money out of things over everything else. I don't need a PhD in economics to understand what happens if you buy something and your concern, your motivation is not to make sure that the sewers work or that everything is improved or that the water will never stop coming out of our taps. Your priority is to make as much money as possible. You don't buy a chain of vets or you don't start buying up local vets that were previously family run in order to indulge your passion for caring for kittens or your tendency for tortoises. You do it because you see an opportunity to make a ton of money. And that's why you start ramping up prices as high as you can, and that's why you postpone repairs and maintenance on waterways and sewers, because you're literally sitting around a table with people being offered a choice. Should we take this money for ourselves, or shall we spend it on fixing sewers? And you now live in a society where everybody in that room says, shut up. we'd take it for ourselves, of course. And then a few years down the line, ITV or Channel 4 make a drama about what an absolute scandal it is, and we all get very, very upset, and we wonder why we weren't aware of it sooner. Well, you choose not to be. You choose not to be aware of it sooner. You choose to ignore the voices telling you that so-called think tanks on Tufton Street dedicated to deregulation and rampant profiteering are polluting our public discourse in much the same way that sewage is polluting our public waterways. We choose not to care. We choose not to notice. And I have enormous sympathy for everybody in that situation because of all the voices, all the energy, all the effort put into persuading you either that there is nothing to see here or that you should be looking over there. Oh, look, some immigrants. And the next thing you know, everything eventually has fallen victim to the cult of the profiteer, the profiteering cult, as you could call it. And it was Vets yesterday. I mention that only because I think I probably owe you an apology. I don't think I was dismissive. I don't think I was dismissive. But I certainly expressed a degree of scepticism. Well, what I said was I have always been allergic to dead cats and conspiracy theories, right? And the argument that Trump does what he does solely to make money is not one to which I fully subscribe. But two things can be true at the same time. We took a caller. I'm struggling at the moment with questions regarding Trump and the Middle East. It's not a big problem because I have, as you've probably noticed, an awful lot to say. I don't really today. I don't think much has changed in the 24 hours since we last spoke. He's having negotiations with people who say he's not having negotiations about a war he says he's already won but hasn't finished yet. That's it, is it? Is that your takeaway? Is that your two-line distillation of everything that's going on in the world at the moment? He's having negotiations with people who say he isn't having negotiations about a war he says he's won but hasn't finished. So I don't have much to add to that. But we took a call on, what day is it today, Keith? Thank you. We took a call on Monday. I took it for a drink on Tuesday. No, we took a call on Monday, and it was a nice lad, a perfectly pleasant caller, and he suggested that the reason why Donald Trump is doing what he's doing, which was a sort of fundamental question that I was asking you on Monday, was in order to, quotes, manipulate the markets. And you could see already at that point some evidence that the markets had, if not been manipulated, then certainly some people appeared to be party to information that the rest of the world wasn't party to moments before Donald Trump announced peace negotiations were underway with Iran. And about 40 minutes before, as we predicted to the nanosecond, about 40 minutes before Iran announced that, no, they're not. We have no idea what you're talking about. Today, of course, they accuse the United States president of negotiating with himself. If you've got the energy, we should probably compare the so-called 15-point peace plan that has apparently been sent to Iran with the one that Barack Obama signed and Donald Trump decided to set fire to. But, as I say, I'm not sure we want to go down that particular avenue today, because what is now being reported on both sides of the Atlantic is that about $500 million in bets on the oil market were placed minutes before President Trump announced that the United States would postpone strikes on Iranian energy targets. So the statement came in at about 11:05 on Monday. And prior to that, about $500 million worth of bets. Think how rich you need to be, what circle you need to be in, to be part of a movement that can lay its hands on $500 million. I mean, what if it's not even a risk? What if I am saying to you, all right, I've got $500 million, but I can't afford to bet it in case I lose. And you say to me, you can't possibly lose, because we know exactly what is going to happen. As soon as the president announces that peace negotiations are underway, then the price of oil will drop. It might go back up again. So the only risk you're taking is deciding when to cash in the profits that you've made on the fall in oil prices. But there's no real risk involved, because I can categorically guarantee to you that the price will come down. About 15 minutes before that social media post, 5,000